Tonight, May 11th, 2014, we're joined by the Grammy Award-winning Christopher Tin, composer of Baba Yetu on Civilization IV. As if that wasn't enough, it's been a very busy week in gaming. From Tomodachi to Amplitude, we've got everyone's opinions on the show where every gamer has a voice.
Orange Lounge Radio.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio live for this episode number 552 on May the 11th of 2014. Happy Mother's Day to all you moms out there, or motherly figures. Pets need moms too, and so forth. Stepmoms and godmoms and all those moms. Happy Mother's Day to all you guys. We are here to talk about video games, gaming culture, and the gamer lifestyle with you guys live, as we do tape live every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, at the Voice of Geeks Network, vognetwork.com. My name is Rob Roberts here in studio with our co-host. Say hello to Dark Sakura, or Jamie Summers.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right.
You're all right?
Yeah.
We've been having some tech problems here in studio tonight. We're on take two of the show, but these things happen.
Yeah.
And hopefully your tablet will stay connected throughout the show this time.
I'm considering taking a narcotic.
A narcotic? Is that how you cope with the program?
Because my hip still hurts.
How'd you hurt your hip, if you don't mind me asking?
It was already sore and a little bit out of alignment, and then I reached over to pick up something and ended up pulling, it's called iliotibial syndrome, meaning that it's the muscle band going from the very top of the hip down to the knee.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's on my right leg. Mm-hmm. It's not sciatica, completely different thing.
Getting old sucks.
Well, it has nothing to do with getting old. It has something to do with...
Oh, it might a little bit.
having... No. It had to do with my old car accident. And since my hip already goes out of alignment, bending over with my hip out of alignment, just sort of... And so I was told not to drive for the 3 days and...
Are you able to sit for long periods and play video games at least?
No.
Uh-oh.
I still have to get up and move it around or else it'll get stiff.
You just have to play some DDR once in a while?
No. But today is the first time in 2 weeks I've done squats.
Oh, there you go.
And so that's fine. I'm back to doing yoga and squats. It just still hurts.
All right. Well, hopefully you got to play some games, but we'll check in with you on that a little bit later.
I played something.
But we also have, say hello in studio to Techmaster Loki.
Hi.
Hi, Loki. How are you doing?
Doing all right.
Yeah? What's new with you?
Not too much.
How goes the coding of Project Loki or whatever you're calling your game that you're making?
Okay. I kind of took a break from what I was doing because I have to make assets for things. But I'll get into that later on. But so I've been working on editor, if you will, I guess, to make my own 3D models. And it's coming along good.
Yeah? And that's like all you do now, right?
That's all I do in my free time, yeah.
Awesome, awesome.
I tried to play Call of Duty, but... People don't seem to line up as far as, when they're online. We have a scheduled time each week that we play, and no one was there. And they're like, well, I can't play until, 10. I'm like, well, I'm not waiting.
That's my problem, too, is one of the games, and I'll get into this a little more when we get into our gaming weeks later, but one game I've been playing is the Heroes of the Storm Technical Alpha that Blizzard has out there. And I have some friends that play it, but we can never seem to line up at the same time. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, I have a lot of friends on the East Coast, and I'm here on the West Coast, and that screws things up more than you'd think. So it can be tricky trying to schedule up that time to do things with friends.
Yeah.
So... All right. We also have here in studio, joining us, he's back, guys, after a few months' break. Say hello, everybody, to Jason.
I'm back.
Welcome back. Well, then where was your voice at the top of the show? I'm just kidding. I'm giving you a hard
time.
That's
one of those things where you pack everything except for one thing. I have a, because my mic is XLR, I needed to, I have a converter to actually plug it into my computer via USB. And I'm pretty sure I put it in its case and then decided not to bring it with me because I didn't think I would need it for another audio obligation that I had as a part of this trip. And I completely forgot about passphrase, show, roll.
Ah, it's fine.
Well.
It's fine. I had to dispel the rumors last week when you didn't do the intro. It was like, was Jason sacked? It's like, no. He's just, sometimes the kid needs a break. So he's been working hard on the YouTubes and all that other stuff. So
last week I was driving and I didn't wake up early enough to take care of it before I had to check out of the hotel, and I wasn't going to pull over on the side of the road. And
this week on Orange Lounge Radio,
yeah, wasn't going to happen.
Thanks.
Plus, I didn't have my converter. Oh, geez. Yeah, I had them peaks. Sorry, guys, and all of your speakers and possibly eardrums. Last week I was driving out to Portland initially. Today, like I said, I went to do it and realized I didn't have a required piece of audio gear. So, well, that settles that one pretty quick. Hopefully I'll have a solution for weekends going forward, though.
Well, going to our chat room, because we do tape live every Sunday night at 6 Pacific, 9 Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show.
The now deaf chat room.
You can join us at live.vognetwork.com.
Oh, please, they're used to it by now.
I know. They've heard Loki rant before. Come on. And we've got lots of Nintendo news tonight, so just you wait, y'all. Just you wait. All right, now, in all seriousness, going to our chat room, we do have people welcoming Jason to the show. Bobby Blackwolf, our buddy, saying Jason destroyed the internet. Which could be the possibility for some of the internet.
I did bring additional devices into the house.
For some of the internet issues we've been having in studio tonight. Can you believe that?
The destroyer of tech.
25 devices on our router. But it makes sense. I mean, we have three nerds that live here now. And then, you know, you bring three more nerds in here on Sunday night. I'm not surprised at all when you consider laptops and phones and all that.
3DSs.
Get video
phones and iPads and multiple computers to a single person.
Exactly.
And gaming console. Yeah.
We are a connected world, my friend.
Ain't we ever.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Let's get into, before we get into our gaming weeks and our interview with Christopher Tin, as you heard in the intro, we do have Christopher Tin on the show tonight. He'll be joining us live in about 15 minutes to talk about his new album, The Drop That Contained the Sea, as well as classic songs of his, including the one I think y'all know as gamers, Baba Yetu, which he won the Grammy for from Civilization IV. Our chat room also asking, how many Final Fantasy 14 clients were online? Just two. So I had to ask them both to take a little break.
Only
I feel bad.
Two.
Alan has one night off of work this week in celebration of Mother's Day, and he can't play the game he wants to play because of his boyfriend's show, but it is what it is. Anyway, before we get to our interview with Christopher Tin, before we get to our gaming weeks, I want to get into tonight's kickoff topic. I'm actually kind of glad the time we get to spend on this topic is limited, so I think this is a good reason that we bring this up first. Jamie, if you wouldn't mind, let us know one of the big controversial things going on in the news this week.
Oh, yeah, it's a pretty big one. And it involves Pokemon. No, it doesn't. But it does involve the...
That news was controversial, too, actually. We'll get into that later.
But it does involve Nintendo. Nintendo basically said that when Tomodachi Life comes out in the U.S., it is going to still not have... same-sex relationships in them, because as they say, and they are recognizing that it's not the best step, but they're saying that because of the programming of the game, that it's not something they can patch out before it ships, that they're going to leave it intact, but for future versions of it that come out, that they're going to as they say, strive to design gameplay experience from the ground up that is more inclusive. So basically they know, we done fucked up, but we're going to fix it.
Which, good on them for making the statement they needed to make. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't want to dwell too much on this, so thank you to Christopher Tin for limiting our time tonight on this topic. But I do want to make clear that there was two distinct statements that came out. And, you know, what you're talking about here is kind of where we're at now, where mm-hmm. all is kind of calmed down a little bit because Nintendo has acknowledged, you know what, maybe this was not the best course of action for us, and in the future we should consider this. But what's going on is that the first time they put something out, it was really just tacky, like what they said. And to back up even further, I think many of you that listen to this show are probably astute on what's going on, because this has been everywhere. This was one of those stories that had wheels that made it onto like the local news in various places. Like, does Nintendo hate gay people? That's like, you know, that's what the media does when it blows these things, you know, a sky high and so forth. And what happened is that in Japan, Tomodachi Life is out, and it's kind of like, it's like a life simulator type game. Like, think The Sims meets Animal Crossing meets Mi Plaza. It's kind of all those things kind of thrown in a blender, a very Japanese twist. Well, in the game, you can, you know, have a baby and all this, but you will have to enter in a relationship with somebody of the opposite gender, you know, in order to start that family. Which, you know, as far as Japan goes and Japanese culture and so forth, and again, a big key word here is perception. Remember that word, folks, perception. The perception in Japan and everything, it's, you know, it's just accepted as this is the way the game is, and it doesn't cause a lot of social ruffling until a bug is found in the game, allowing folks to get into same-sex relationships by basically registering the same-sex partner as somebody of the opposite sex the game thinks they are or whatever. And so you get into a relationship. And actually, there was kind of a subculture in Japan. Think like Japan's Tumblr blew up with these pictures and fans everywhere of like, look, I've got this same-sex couple in Tamagotchi Life. Isn't that rad? And so forth. You know. But then, because this bug also broke the game, Nintendo said, we got to patch it out. And I truly don't think Nintendo was trying to make a, oh, we got to patch out the gay. No, they had to patch out a mistake for something that truly wasn't intended.
You say that like it's also, you say the patch out the gay like the pray away the gay.
Kind of. But I think what really happened is that, you know, it was just ignorance, people. That's what it was. When the game was created, it was kind of ignorant in a way to a lot of the people that wanted to play it. Now, I made the mistake when this story went big, I made the mistake of logging onto websites and reading the comments. Will people please remind me not to do that? Will people
don't do that.
I can't fucking help myself. I always want to go on and see, gosh, I wonder what the commenters on Joystick have to say about this. Gosh, I wonder what the YouTube comments have to say on this.
Rob,
and I know what I'm going to fucking get, and I get angry.
Just do what I do. Stop giving a fuck.
It's hard. It's Dark Sakura, it's so hard.
Run out of fucks to give. Use them up.
It's hard when on one hand you're really, really...
I said fucks and you said it's hard.
It's really difficult when on one hand you're really, really rooting for Nintendo, and then on the other hand you're like, God damn it, stop making it worse for yourself. And I've used this comparison a lot in my broadcast days, but one of my favorite television moments ever was on America's Next Top Model when Tyra Banks started yelling at one of the contestants, be quiet, Tiffany! Be quiet. We were rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. That's how I felt about Nintendo this week. I just wanted to put my finger out and be like, be quiet, Nintendo. Be quiet. You're not listening to what the people are really saying. And they put out this comment about the whole, oh, well, it's just this whimsy. We're not trying to make social commentary. It's a whimsical world. And I'm like, oh my God, be quiet, Nintendo. Be quiet. You're making it worse. Because now you're basically saying, in our whimsical, magical world, we've made a place where gays don't exist. Perception.
Boy play girl.
Perception is everything.
The porn game.
And whether that's how they meant it or not, that's how their statement came across. Is that, don't you want to buy this game where gays don't exist? And you may not want to make social commentary, but you can't sit there and say, I'm Switzerland, I'm not making social commentary, I'm not being involved. Like, you don't get to say that. By making a video game, which haven't we argued time and time again, video games are art, right? Haven't we tried to convince Roger Ebert and other critics out there? Haven't we tried to convince video games are art? What is art supposed to do?
Provoke.
Provoke what?
Just provoke.
Provoke. And one of those things it provokes? Emotion. Social commentary.
Yeah.
So you can't come out and say a video game does not get into social commentary because it did. And that's the problem, guys. I'm telling you, like, I know many of you are out there listening to Orange on the Story. Maybe we have some new listeners tonight, thanks to Christopher Tin being on and, you know, just everything else going on. I just need to tell you something. As a gay gamer, okay? And I've made no secret about that over the time. I'm not the type of guy that goes out there and is like, you know, I'm gay, and I play video games. You know, I'm not really that type of person. I'm not ashamed of who I am. Absolutely. I put myself out there as, this is how I am. Deal with it. This is the way my creator made me, right? And so I am a video game fan who happens to be gay. And let me tell you what kind of goes through your mind when you see something like this, is that it's... Imagine if you're playing this game that's supposed to be fun. Imagine you're a heterosexual male out there, because, you know, that's a big, big demographic. And you're playing this game that's just whimsical commentary. But that game forces you to enter into a relationship that maybe you don't want to get into. And if you're trying to create a me that looks like yourself, and you're trying to play a character with good values because that's how you feel about yourself, and you're trying to create a character in a life simulation game that's a reflection on yourself, but you hit a wall that you thought in many parts of society we've climbed over time and time again, and you can't actually accurately reflect yourself, it's very frustrating, and it's a huge setback, like emotionally. Like, I play video games to escape this shit. Now, some of you guys might bring up, well, in Mass Effect, I can do this. And, you know, in these other games, in Dragon Age, there's that one character who, you know, maybe I didn't want to romance the same gender, but I have to. There's a difference. Those games are storytelling. You're not playing a reflection of yourself in a life simulator game or a reflection of a character you want to be. You're playing somebody else's narrative. There is a huge difference whether Nintendo wants to say there is or not. Anyway, sorry, I'm hogging the conversation, but obviously I had a lot to say on that. I do want to just say kudos to Nintendo. They realized the mistake. They came out and they said exactly what they needed to say the first time. They came out and said it was an oversight not to do this in the game. We realized we made a mistake. In the future, we'll try to do better. Thank you. That's all I wanted the first time. That's all I wanted was, like, you know, just acknowledge. Like, don't put all this smoke and mirrors shit of it's a social whimsy world. Just come out and say we are too lazy to reprogram the game, because that's essentially what it is. It's a port. They don't want to go back and recode the whole damn thing.
I would believe that.
I do.
Too lazy to reprogram a game. Virtual console. Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems about accurate.
Mm-hmm. Going to our chat room. I'm sure the chat room is lighting up over at live.vognetwork.com, and I apologize. So I'm going to because I wasn't reading as I was ranting there, so I'm kind of looking at some stuff now. Bochikawa in chat says, regardless of this news and outcry of this, I would have really liked to see this bug not affect the game in drastic ways, because that community that would have been born of this would be quite an interesting force to add to our gaming culture. Might even be a subset of gamer, but we will never know. Well, it could be the sequel. You know, we'll see what happens. Eric RPG says, never mind, Japan is a very isolationist society who needs a whole social paradigm shift. That's a really tough topic for me to get into, and I am going to say I am not the most well-educated when it comes to Japanese culture because I've never lived there, so I'm not going to try to make a statement on that. But I will just say from what I've gathered, Japan is not as progressed as we are at this point. But change is coming, folks, because more and more people are beginning to know somebody who is gay. And the more you know people that are gay, you start to realize they're really not different.
Know what you know and know what you don't know.
Kinda, right? So, anyhow, let's see. Going to our chat room as well, Act Deft says, Nintendo was in the right all along, but they screwed up with their initial comments. I don't know if I'd go as far to say that they were right. Maybe Nintendo... I truly believe Nintendo did have the best intentions at heart, but it was just ignorance that came into play. So let's use this to educate them a little bit. But when they came out and released that first statement, it was like... it was kind of just gross and ignorant and so on.
Here's why I'm going to stick with Animal Crossing for my fun little cutesy sim and the actual Sims for the adult angle, for the maturity angle. Mm-hmm. How's that sound?
What if Animal...
because I can have alien babies.
What if Animal Crossing had forced you to get into a relationship with Ed? That the only way you could have a baby in that game is to make a baby with Ed. How would you feel?
Well, that's what I feel about the only way to make a baby in Tomodachi Life is to get married. It's the same thing to me.
Interesting perspective.
Marriage and having children have nothing to do each other to do with each other. I'm just saying this. I've been married for almost 9 years with my husband for almost 17 years, and yeah, maybe I wanted a baby for a little while, but it wasn't the sole basis of our marriage. You know, I see those assholes, oh, my wife won't give me a baby, I'm leaving her. Fuck you! You marry someone because you love them. And that's the whole point. If you have the game and you have the ability to get married, it should be because you are playing a relationship in that game, not just to fucking breed.
And sometimes difficulties come into play where mom or dad may not be able to have a child.
Exactly.
And so, you know, that's why I always get like I don't mean to get on a political tangent. I'm gonna take this tangent train on a very quick trip, okay? That's why I always get really like my feathers get really ruffled when I hear the arguments about it takes a man and a woman to raise a baby and that's a proper family is to have a man and a woman. What about that family where mom passed away during childbirth? How offensive is a statement like that to that family where the dad is doing everything to raise that child appropriately?
Yeah.
Think before you open your fucking mouth. Why don't you just say, I think gay people are gross? Because that's what I hear. Again, perception, folks. That's,
they've got when you make, the cooties.
When you make a comment like that. Loki, you and I lived together for what, 2.5 years? Did you catch gay living with me? Did you catch it?
No. But then again, you throw like a girl, so.
So do you.
Well, what about this, too? I mean, I'll just talk about my infant. You know, my mom left my dad when I was a baby because at the time, my dad was not a very stable individual. Mm-hmm. You know, she left because of domestic abuse. Would we have all rather then that my mom had stayed with my dad and have him not get any better, beat on her, beat on me, and have that kind of a broken childhood as opposed to her, you know, raising me with my grandmother and having me raised. I was raised in a matriarchal house. Mm-hmm. You know, not, you know, I'm just saying, you know, look at these people who have to make tough decisions like this. What about women or, you know, women who are raped and decide that, you know, because of moral reasons or whatever, they're going to have that kid. Do you want them to hunt down their rapist and say, help me raise this baby?
Well, these are all very tough social questions, obviously. You're asking some very uncomfortable questions. But I think what people have to realize is that, yeah, it might be just a video game. But when it's supposed to be a life reflection, life is a little more complicated than that.
It's a lot more complicated, yeah.
So, and sometimes we play video games to escape life. But then when the game sets down all these rules that seem very arbitrary, it can be very difficult.
That's actually why I really like the whole approach of The Sims to it, mm-hmm. because you can you know, bang somebody, get knocked up, and kick them out of the house if you want to. You know, you can raise the baby by yourself if you want to. I have had a character do it. You know, you can have, you know, same-sex parents, opposite-sex parents, and aliens and vampires. Mm-hmm. Basically, no one looks at you weird because no one gives a shit. It's not their business. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I like that approach. Mm-hmm. Don't make it anything that's, oh, weird. Just make no one care. Because mm-hmm. really, no one should care. It's no one else's business.
All right. Well, we've got to move on because it is about 6:30 and I've got to move into our interview tonight. You know, we've been talking a lot in this opening about how civilization has changed. And, you know, there is another simulator out there. One of my favorites of all time, Civilization, that has existed through 5 different games. And the third Civilization game, I'm going to be honest, y'all, Civ 3, not my favorite in the series. It's still a good game. It's like ice cream. Even a bad flavor is still ice cream. It's still pretty good. That's how I feel about Civ 3. But then, you know, when I first played Civ 4 for the first time, and I fired up that, you know, loading screen and saw that opening movie, it was very much like, yes, this is the rebirth of civilization. This is a new game. This is going to be awesome. And so Civ 4, you know, a lot of that is credited to the soundtrack of the game. And one of the most influential songs in the game that had such an impact was a song called Baba Yetu. And we are going to be welcoming to the composer of Baba Yetu to the show tonight, Christopher Tin. Before we give him a call, let's take a listen to a clip because it is an audio download. I can't play the entire song for you because you gotta go to ChristopherTin.com and get this album for yourself. But we're going to play a clip here to set the mood of Baba Yetu from Civilization 4 here on Orange Lounge Radio before we welcome Christopher Tin. Baba yetu yetu liye binguni yetu yetu amina baba yetu yetu liye mjina la kweli tukuzwe
baba yetu yetu liye binguni yetu yetu amina baba yetu yetu liye mjina la kweli.
still get chills listening to that. I don't know about you guys, but that's like, oh, such a great song there. Again, that's a clip of Baba Yetu from Civilization 4. And we are going to get the composer of Baba Yetu on the line right now. We're going to do this live here. We're going to give Christopher a call and get him on the show to talk about Baba Yetu as well. Hello. As his brand new album. Hi there. Is this Christopher?
Yeah, this is.
Hey, Christopher. How you doing? It's Rob from Orange Lounge Radio. You're on the air. How's it going?
Hi, Rob.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. Congratulations. You just released your brand new album, The Drop That Contained the Sea, this week, right?
Yes, I did. This Thursday, in fact.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, if people want to pick up a copy of The Drop That Contained the Sea, where's the best place to go to pick that up?
Well, the best place is my own website, christophertin.com. you can also get it at iTunes and Amazon, but they take a big cut. So my website's definitely the best place to do it.
So if you want to make sure that Christopher is actually the one getting your money, because he deserves it for this soundtrack, check out ChristopherTin.com. We see some folks in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com. Tiger Claw is asking, will you take questions from the chat room? Absolutely. If you have a question for Christopher Tin, head on over to our chat room, live.vognetwork.com. I've also got some questions from social media we will get to in just a little bit. But Christopher, if you don't mind, I want to take a step back because we are a show primarily about video games and gaming culture. So you have an awesome title by your name. You are the first person to win a Grammy for a song that was composed for a video game. How does that feel when you hear that?
It's kind of cool. I mean, you know, the history of video games is littered with all sorts of trivia, and it's kind of cool that I get to be a little footnote in that history. So, I mean, it's cool. I really enjoy it.
You might end up a Jeopardy question someday. That's pretty awesome.
That would be hilarious if that happened. I would love that.
Which would feel better, the Grammy or the Jeopardy question? No, don't answer that.
I don't know. That's a tough one, you know? Yeah.
Don't answer that. That was a dumb question. All right. let's take a step back. Since we are a video game show, I want to talk about Civilization 4, obviously. I'm a huge fan of the Civ series, and I just talked about how, you know, Civ 3 was, you know, for me, it was not the strongest Civ game, but Civ 4, you know, that was such a rebirth for the series for me, and a huge part of that was the music. Like, when you fire up that game for the first time and you hear Baba Yetu and you see the full motion video of Civilization being created, it really sets the mood for this epic rebirth for Civilization. So I know you've probably been asked this question a million times, but for the sake of our audience, how did you end up being asked to do Baba Yetu for Civ 4?
It's a pretty funny story, actually. It's so the lead designer of Civilization 4 is a guy named Soren Johnson, who happened to be my roommate back in college. And I went to my 5-year college reunion, and I ran into Soren, and I said, "Hey, Soren, hey, what are you up to?" You know, and he said, "Oh, I'm a video game designer now." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, that's cool." Like, and he said, "I'm working on a game." Actually, he said he just finished a game. It was Civilization 3. I said, "Oh, fantastic! I love the Civ series. I grew up playing it." And he said, "That's great. Well, I'm working on Civ 4. Have you ever considered writing music for video games?" And I hadn't at the time, but obviously, I mean, it was a thrilling idea for me because, like I said, I grew up playing Civilization, and I logged, like many other people, I logged, you know, hundreds of hours playing that game. Mm-hmm. And a few months later, I got a call from him saying, "Hey, Chris, we took some of the music that you produced in college, and we stuck it on the game, and we really liked it. We were wondering if we could hire you to write a new piece of music that had an African influence as well as an orchestral influence with lots of big taiko drums." And I said, "Yeah, I'd love to do it." So that was kind of my version of the breaking into the business story, just a pure chance encounter with my old college roommate, which led to pretty much the biggest break of my life.
It seems so crazy that they talk about sometimes, you know, and I was just having a conversation with a colleague before the show tonight, that a lot of the gaming industry sometimes is about, you know, who you know. And it's so interesting that, you know, yeah, it was this chance encounter or whatever, but it worked out so perfectly. Like, you just, like, you can't imagine Civ 4 without that soundtrack now.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, isn't it? You think about it. And, I mean, this was like, I think 10 years ago that I ran into him at our reunion, maybe 11 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's almost one of these things where it's like it almost never happened for me, you know, and my life would be very different now if I hadn't run into Soren. So,
right. Wow.
It's a cool thing, I got to say.
Well, congratulations. I mean, your music is incredible and you're very deserving of the success. So congratulations to you.
Oh, thanks, Bob. I appreciate that.
No worries. Baba Yetu, it's had a lasting presence. I mean, here we are still talking about, I mean, they're on Civ 5 and talking about like Civ 5.5 now with the After Earth and all this or whatever they're making this year. You know, yet here we are talking about Baba Yetu. This song's had such a lasting presence. How did it feel to win a Grammy for a song that you'd written years ago?
It was a great feeling. I mean, it was kind of surreal, mm-hmm. and it actually didn't sink in for about a year until the following year when I went to the Grammys as a spectator. And I knew some people at that time who were nominated for Grammys, and one by one I saw them all not win. Mm-hmm. And at that point I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe I managed to get through. You know, I can't believe it happened for me. That's when it really sank in. I mean, it was kind of a surreal experience when I actually got it, though.
Baba Yetu is really a staple of the Video Games Live Tour. I'm sure you're probably familiar with the Video Games Live Tour that Tommy Tallarico puts on, and he's still touring the world with this. And I was actually just telling a story to Bobby on the show prior to us tonight that when I went and saw Video Games Live, I remember them playing Baba Yetu, and it was a huge, you know, that was like one of the memorable pieces in the show for me. Have you seen or participated in Video Games Live, and how do you kind of feel about your song being such a staple of the tour?
Oh, well, I love it, and actually I'm very heavily involved in the show. I actually conduct it from time to time.
Nice.
I conducted the Canada tour last year. So we did, you know, we went coast to coast in Canada and did the show for a number of different audiences. And I'm going to be conducting it again. Well, I'm going to be conducting Baba Yetu again this June at the LA E3 Video Games Live show. So that'll be
wow.
a treat. I mean, I love it. I mean, they were the ones who premiered the song live. They performed it at the Hollywood Bowl back in, I think, 2006. And, you know, I got to give credit to Tommy and Jack Wall as well, who was conducting it. They really brought that song out of purely the video game world and into this new world that I'm connected to, which is the classical world. Because of Video Games Live, the sheet music got published by Alfred Publishing, which is a large sheet music publisher. And Alfred issued it, and it became a hit amongst high school choirs. And suddenly, thousands of choirs around the world were singing this song, you know, just for their spring concerts and whatever. But it introduced my music to a brand new audience. And I like to think that this was a big sort of step in me. I think it's kind of difficult for video game composers to hop over to the mainstream, right? And I think this was my particular way of doing so. It was purely through the fact that my music got performed so much and the sheet music that I sort of found an audience outside of video games.
Wow, that's amazing. Do you still plan to kind of work with like work with video games composed for future video games, or I mean, are you kind of now you're on this different path where you're able to kind of express, you know, the world music on your own through these albums? Do you see yourself working with video games again in the future?
I actually have a new song coming out in a game that I can't tell you the game, but I can tell you that it'll be announced in a few days, actually. But if people like Baba Yetu, it's similar in terms of the style of it. And it's the game itself that it's coming out in is, let's just say, it's in that same world. So
I would say stay tuned.
I mean, there'll be an announcement pretty soon, within the next week, I think.
Well, I have a guess what that might be, but we'll see. We'll see. That'd be awesome. I'm hoping it's true. I'm sure whatever it is will be awesome. Let's continue to talk about the future. I know that you have a new album that's out there, so I definitely want to let you talk about that new album. So what do your fans have to look forward to from your new release, The Drop That Contained the Sea?
Well, it's a lot more sort of epic, world-influenced orchestral choral music, I guess, is the way to describe it. I mean, if people like Baba Yetu, then there's a lot of tracks on there that I think blow Baba Yetu away. But, you know, we'll see what other people think. But I'm really proud of it, actually. I think it's been my way of maturing over the last couple of years as a composer. Mm-hmm. I think the level of writing is a lot deeper. My level of expression is a lot more personal and a lot more grandiose, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel really good about it on a purely artistic level. And I, so far, the response that I've gotten from people has been very positive as well, seeing people have been saying that it's a kind of a very, it's like the evolution of my writing, and it feels like a lot of people have said it surpasses my previous album. So I feel really good about it, I gotta say.
You know, that's a great point, because, you know, when you talk about, like, you know, that this is kind of like where you're at now, and things have evolved and so forth. I think, like, everybody always asks me, like, how can I go listen to Orange Lounge Radio episode 1? And I kind of go, we're on episode 552 now. So we've been doing this a very long time. And I'm kind of like, you don't worry about episode 1, guys. It's not even as good as what we're doing now.
Yeah, totally. You know, you always want to push yourself as an artist, and you always want to evolve, right? And what's a little difficult sometimes is some people, especially if you're an artist that releases an album once every 5 years or something, they're kind of locked into a time capsule for, you know, in terms of who you were 5 years ago and what you were writing then. Mm. But you always do want to push yourself as a writer, because you want to grow, right?
Right.
And, I mean, if people just want to listen to the stuff I was writing 5 years ago, there's already an album for that. But, you know, I do sort of want to bring people along for a ride. And you know, of course, like, I hope to reward their you know, participation on this journey by delivering a good product. And I hope that I've done that.
I think you have. I think when people listen to The Drop That Contained the Sea, they will not be disappointed. We're going to play a track from that in a little bit at the end of the interview, so people can get a little taste of that. But if you want to hear more of it, check out The Drop That Contained the Sea at ChristopherTin.com. Christopher, our chat room is lighting up with questions. In fact, I'm not even going to be able to get to all these. I feel awful. But I do want to ask you some of these questions that are coming from our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com. I'm going to go with this one from Dark Tetsuya, who asks, is there a particular genre of game you've always wanted to compose music for?
Interesting. Particular genre. I think... like a role-playing game of some sort. I mean, I think that'd be great. Or an MMO, actually. You know what? I love the idea of working on an MMO, something where people give me kind of a world to populate with my ideas, so to speak. Yeah, something like that. I'm not so drawn to things like first-person shooters or...
All right. Whatever
gives me the opportunity to write good music. But honestly, I just love working on games anyway, so kind of, you know, whatever people ask me to do, I'm probably thrilled to do it.
Well, I was going to say, if Blizzard is out there listening, Christopher's waiting for your call, so just know that.
Yeah, I know. Actually, I know all those Blizzard guys, and you know, one of these days, maybe I'll come begging at their doorstep or something.
I don't think they'd mind.
No, I love them. They're a really talented bunch of guys. So, I have a lot of respect for them.
Going to a question from Dungeon Buster, who saw your AMA recently on Reddit. Dungeon Buster asks, can he share what about Katamari Damacy's sound makes it amazing to him? I love the soundtrack too, but I'm curious to know what excites him about it. Yeah, I got to admit, Christopher, when I hear your music, I don't necessarily see Katamari Damacy influence. What's that about?
Oh man, but it's so good. I don't know. I can't explain it, but I just love the energy and the zaniness of it. And the, we're not just talking about the main theme, which is fantastic, of course. But I mean, in my mind, the entire soundtrack to all of the Katamari games is genius. I mean, they've got a wide diversity of styles in there. Some great vocal performances, some great tracks being produced by a number of different, like, DJs and producers and so forth. I mean, I think it's just really, really cool. And I think it takes a special, really quirky game like Katamari to pull off a soundtrack like that. You're never going to hear that in any other game. And I don't know. I think it's just fantastic writing.
And I kind of miss that series myself.
I have to say, though, it combines like anything from old swing to jazz to the whole crooner style. Mm-hmm. You know, like my two favorite tracks are completely stylistically different from each other. Is, the Moon and the Prince, and then Que Sera Sera.
Totally right. I mean, it's all over the place, and I think that's why it's so fun too, because it's like this giant amalgamation. It's like a Katamari in musical form.
It really is.
Right? It's like a giant amalgamation of random like songs thrown together, and I just think it's fantastic.
Let's go to another question from our chat room from Gamer Girl, who asks, is there an influence outside of video games that you get your inspiration for the music you compose? Well, there's got to be plenty, right?
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, I'll tell you what inspired me to write the latest album is I got really turned on to the band Florence and the Machine a couple of years ago.
Oh, yes.
I totally dig her. And this album was kind of inspired by that feeling that I got when I first listened to her debut album, Lungs. I mean, I just loved the raucousness of it, and I loved the lyrics, and I loved her vocal performance and sort of the gospel influence. And that album, there's absolutely no direct influence on any of the songs. I mean, they're so stylistically different, but the energy that I got from her really made me want to create an album like my latest one. There's all the other sort of influences that I have from being a classically trained composer and playing jazz and, doing all these other different things growing up and listening to world music and performing in world music groups. But honestly, the influence comes from all over the place.
That's amazing to hear, because Florence is one of my favorites. I got to say, Shake It Out is probably like one of my 10 favorite songs ever written. So,
oh, I know, right? Oh, my God, yeah.
She wrote it in like 15 minutes, apparently. She's like she just literally...
I have one that I like better, though, and that's My Boy Builds Coffins.
Oh, yeah.
That one I could just sing.
Yeah, so good.
But she's very diverse in her styles, too, if you really think about it. And I know on your albums you have all these songs in different languages, and it's very diverse as well. I would have never made that connection to Florence. That's so funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's purely on a fan level that I'm connected to her. I mean, there's no sort of like, it's not like our music is related in any sort of level, but I'm just a huge fan. So.
I understand the feeling very well.
One tiny question for me.
Of course.
I did happen to notice it sounded like you had a little bit of a minimalist influence as well, like Philip Glass.
Actually, I was a big John Adams fan all through college, actually. That's well spotted. I'm not sure where you spotted that, but, that's woven into my DNA musically. So, I mean, all this sort of stuff surfaces at one point or another. So, good catch.
I just sort of got the feeling across the board, it's like, how there's just that it'll start with one theme and then build and build and build, but it's so subtle that you don't notice it until one point.
Well, what were we talking about a minute ago? Art always provokes response, and it's always interesting how that response comes in all these different ways.
But
so
I actually, when I'm a designer as my hobby now. I do it only for volunteer work now. Mm-hmm. But when I listen to you, actually, when I draw, I listen to Philip Glass. And depending on the style of what I'm doing, depends the style of music I'm going to listen to. It's like I will fully throw on, Ella Fitzgerald if I'm doing, 30s and 40s style. So,
all right. Well, I don't want to take up too much of Christopher's time. I just have a couple more questions from our chatters and our listeners. One more question from chat here, Christopher, from Tiger Claw, who asks, "Have you ever thought of composing? Speaking of diversity, have you ever thought of composing for feature films or TV?"
Yeah, I'd never really given TV much of a thought until recent years. And I think that's because, I think TV's gotten really good recently. And, I've started to become more of a fan of TV. Films, my original intent was to write for movies. But along the way, I sort of got sidetracked by commercials, games, and, this career that I have now. I would love to write for films. I think collaborative work is a lot of fun. And films are a great medium to work in. So, I mean, I have done a number of films, and I'd certainly like to do more. So, I mean, I'm just, I'm keeping all my options open at this point.
All right. I'm going to go to one more question. This one's actually from Facebook, and I know this guy is a huge fan of yours, so he'd be so devastated if I didn't ask his question. I'm going to. So Awesome Unicorn is on our Facebook and asked you this question earlier this week, who said, "I'd like to hear about the process of selecting vocalists for the songs. Some of your work seems very tailored to a specific type of performance or singing style, and then others seem like a wider range of vocalists would be able to perform the songs. Do you tend to write songs with specific performers in mind to sing them, or do the songs come first and the quest for the vocalist later?"
Hello, Awesome Unicorn, first of all. I do actually write specifically with vocalists in mind. I mean, usually what will happen is I'll listen to a bunch of records and I'll identify who I want to work with. And then I'll just track them down on the internet and write to them. And if they're game, I will write with them in mind. And with a lot of the singers I've reached out to, they've totally been game. And so the songs were pretty much tailored to them. Mm-hmm. I think there's a real advantage to doing that. First of all, when you have you know, if you have a specific singer in mind, you can write to their strengths. And right. when you write to their strengths, they'll perform the hell out of it, right? And when they perform the hell out of it, you get an immensely dramatic and gratifying performance. And, you know, you maybe won't always get that when you write something in the abstract and have someone else come in and sing it later. And there are times when I've done that as well. And it works some of the times. But generally speaking, I prefer to have someone in mind when I'm writing for them. So I'm writing a song, I prefer to have a particular voice in mind. Let me put it that way.
Makes it good to know. I'm glad we could resolve Awesome Unicorn's inquiry there. Before we let Christopher go and get to the other song preview, Jamie, you mentioned you have one other quick question you wanted to sneak in.
What is your favorite non-standard time signature?
Oh, jeez.
Probably, I don't know, maybe 7-8 or 5-8. I mean, something like that. I'm going to start exploring more and more complex ones as I get further and further into Bulgarian music and Bulgarian rhythms, which are very complicated, you know, 7-8, 9-8, 11-8, 13-8, things like that. I'm just going to start exploring a little more. But I think there's plenty of great music that can be written in 4-4, I got to say.
So, I agree with that. I just keep thinking about the first time I ever, I was a band nerd, played Mars Bringer of War, and learning how to do 5-8, and I was like, I want more of this.
Yeah, right?
Only you
there's
would go there.
A little bit
there.
Of a Mars Bringer of War influence on one of the songs on my new album, too, actually.
Ooh, I'm excited, because that's like my favorite in the planets.
Oh my god, yeah, it's fantastic. Actually, the ninth track of my album, it's called Hafgengr Friðum, which is a sort of setting of a Old Norse Viking text. I mean, that's one. There's a piece where, you know, there's a little bit of Mars Bringer of War. There's a little bit of Carmina Burana. There's a little bit of Nobuo Uematsu's Liberi Fatali. You know, there's all these influences. And, you know, I'm speaking to a gamer crowd here, but, and this is why I feel comfortable saying this. Like, there's a lot of game soundtracks out there which have this sort of bombastic, you know, Gustav Holst Mars Bringer of War sound to them, you know, these gothic choirs and things like that. And I'd never really had the opportunity to write for a game like that. And I sort of resisted writing a piece like that, sort of for my own projects. But after I conducted Video Games Live and after I conducted Liberi Fatali a number of times, I was just like, I want to write a piece like this. I you know, screw it. I just want to do this. You know, I don't care, you know, if it's been done 1,000 times. I'm going to write my own version of this type of gothic bombastic thing. And so, you know, I channeled Stravinsky and Karl Orff and you know, all these other guys and you know, cranked out this big old Viking tune, which was a lot of fun to do, you know.
Well, I'm sitting here excited now.
Well, only Dark Sakura would go there and take it to a whole nother music nerd level. But the chat room is eating it up. Just so you know, Christopher, chat room is Bobby Blackwolf saying, 7-8 is my favorite too. And Carson doing music nerd high five. And they're music nerding out there. So that's
woohoo! High five, guys. High five.
My first major in college was a music major. So.
Oh, fantastic.
I was a band nerd. I was a clarinet player in high school myself.
So. Oh, fantastic. I was a trumpet player.
So, yeah. So I was sax and contra alto clarinet, just to be different.
All right.
Wow.
Well, music
band geeks unite.
Music nerds and band nerds and video game nerds everywhere have a reason to check out Christopher Tin. You can check him out on his website, ChristopherTin.com, and you can check out the new album, The Drop That Contained the Sea, which I'm sure many of you haven't heard yet because it just came out this week, so no excuses. Go check that out at ChristopherTin.com. Christopher, as we say goodbye to you, we're going to check out one of these songs from the new album. This is track 4, and I apologize if I horribly butchered the name. But it's Iza Nomso, I believe.
Yeah, it's Iza Ngomso, which means come tomorrow. Oh, and this is also performed by the Soweto Gospel Choir, who perform Baba Yetu. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of trivia about this song. I wrote this at the last minute. I was on a plane to Johannesburg, and it's a long story, but I was being flown around for this commercial project I was doing for Emirates Airlines, and they were flying me all around the world business class. So I had a very cushy seat. And I was on my way to Johannesburg, and I thought, I need to write another song for these guys to sing. And so I wrote this song, and it's about clouds, which is kind of a fitting thing to write about when you're flying. So it's got a sort of a brisk, sort of breezy feel, like you're sort of flying through the clouds. And it's the lyrics are about, you know, the lyrics translate to things like a bird, I fly, I sing. Like a bird, I'm holding on to the wind. Very sort of poetic stuff about, you know, clouds and flying through the air. So,
well, we're
going to
Well, we're going to check this out right after I say goodbye. Christopher, thank you so much for taking the time out today with us. I know today's a big day for a lot of people with Mother's Day and everything. So thank you for spending time with us, and best of luck with the new album. And I really encourage people everywhere to check it out on your website.
Thanks, guys. It was a lot of fun.
And I look forward to the surprise announcement this week. Wink, wink.
Yeah. Keep an eye out.
All right. Take care, Christopher. It was a real honor.
Likewise.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
That was Christopher Tin, everybody, and you can check out his new album, The Drop That Contained the Sea, at ChristopherTin.com. And in the meantime, here is a clip. Again, I can't play the whole thing for you guys, but I think it's on his website if you want to check it out over at ChristopherTin.com. This is a clip of track 4 from the album, Iza Nyomso. I think I said that right. Come Tomorrow is what
Nyomso?
It means.
Nyomso?
Here it is. So. Come Tomorrow. I'll just say Come Tomorrow. Here it is, guys, at OrangeLoungeRadio.com. Just a little clip there of Iza Nyomso, or Come Tomorrow, from the new album, The Drop That Contained the Sea, that Christopher Tin just put out this past week. And I got to say, this is why you listen to the show live, people. I'm looking at our chat room at live.vognetwork.com. Christopher Tin just popped in our chat room. And I was apologizing to chat because there were questions I couldn't get to because, you know, we were only supposed to have him for 15, 20 minutes and we were pushing it. But there he is. He's in our chat room right now. He says, my wife is cooking dinner now. I might have to run at any minute, but I thought I'd pop in and say hi. That's amazing. I love it. Thank you so much, Christopher. You're a great man.
So cool.
I know. Who knew that they, you know, we'd have an interview? They just pop right in the chat and go mingle with all the people listening to the show right
and
after the interview.
Someone else who has a love of John Adams, that just makes me happy.
And that was a great that clip we just heard was great too.
It was really pretty.
So good. Best of luck to Christopher Tin in the future, and I think we'll be seeing him on the Grammy stage again. Call it a hunch. So
The Planets is a great composition.
Yeah.
I'm more of a fan of Jupiter, though.
That's all right.
Really?
Yeah, it's always been my favorite for whatever reason.
I like Venus. That might be Lady Gaga's influence. I'm kidding.
Girl.
All right. Let's get back into some other video game talk because we are running a little long, so I've got to steer us back on track. As exciting as it was to have Christopher with us, let's talk about our gaming weeks and the types of video games that we have been playing this week. I am going to ask everybody to kind of keep it brief for time's sake. So, Dark Sakura, why don't you start?
I've been playing Bravely Default. I think I'm finally about to retire Animal Crossing.
Oh, no.
I don't know, because I just want D.Va to move, and she wouldn't. I told her to move, and she's like, well, because you want me to move, I'm just going to stay so we become better friends. I'm like, uh-uh. I'm going to hit you with a bug net.
As the Animal Crossing forest turns.
So I've also done that. I'm actually looking a bit more into how I'm going to do a casual femship, because I'm only getting one of my costumes that I was going to do for Gamer X. I am going Crocker Tier Jane. I have to make my huge mungus fork. And I'm also back to playing D&D. Second edition for the win.
You're talking like tabletop.
Heck yeah.
That's awesome. I saw your picture on Facebook of stacking dice, and I'm like, yeah, but that's
so 10 stack dice is not, you know, a 10 dice high stack isn't bad. You know, and not to, you know, my friend who's the GM did a very, very good job. I was just, you know, ooh, shiny. And I was playing something else. Oh, yeah. I actually played a little bit of Final Fantasy 14 this week. I haven't had a whole bunch of time because when I haven't been working on stuff, I've been kind of high as a kite mm-hmm. on Vicodin because my hip hurts. But I'm actually trying to put more time back into doing some design. I actually am submitting a series of designs for Inside Sim Racing, speaking of gaming. The guy who runs it, Darren, he's a really great guy, runs a really quality sim racing show. That's, you know, well, Dan got a lot of his ideas for doing his driving rig. Mm-hmm. And so any other designers, because I'm not, you know, into not doing this as a competition or anything. He's looking for designers. Check out the forums there. You know, you want to design a logo for a really high quality video sim racing show. There you go.
To register participation for this week's episode of Orange Lounge Radio at VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase "ghost."
All right. I'm going to move on. Let's go to Jason. You're our guest here, and with that interview, we haven't gotten to talk to you a lot tonight. How was your gaming week, Jason?
This week specifically has been really light. Again, because I was traveling all over the place, and other people's houses that you stay at when you're in town for a convention, and even hotels don't exactly stock that kind of thing particularly well. This week, literally, I went back into the office yesterday. As I mentioned on shows prior, my office has a little gaming. It is quite literally a shipping crate. It is a huge orange, oddly enough, shipping container. And we have two of them around the office. One of them on one of the floors is a little gaming room that we turn it into. A couple of arcade machines that are actually property of employees who have no space in San Francisco houses. Anyways, in our gaming room at work, we have an Xbox One. And needless to say, people were pretty thrilled that Titanfall came out. So I bought that for myself on the 360 not long ago. I've been trekking through that on the Xbox One, and I use that as an excuse to stream because I wanted to actually be able to sit down and try out some of that stuff.
That streaming stuff's addicting, isn't it?
That and Peggle 2. It's I ran into so many just kind of like stupid problems because from when other people have done it, the Kinect is the microphone. We actually have a headset at work, and when you have the headset, that becomes the streaming microphone. But the problem is that with something like Titanfall multiplayer, all of the audio goes to the game and to the streaming, or none of it if you hit the mute on the controller. So, and then a couple of other things. Because I've been playing on the 360, I leveled up to 20-something, and it was completely brand new on the Xbox One, which actually really pissed me off because you lose a bunch of weapons and other beneficial things that let you actually hold your own in that game. Anyways, Titanfall still looks amazing, a little bit more amazing. Newer TVs at work, more recent and bigger. I've been touching the Windows world, and so after I got back from the office, I was playing around with La Mulana. I finally got a chance to sit down and play with that, and
nice.
Also did streaming. There was never any conversation, so I don't know if who checked it out, if any. Whatever. It was interesting. It's been a long time since I've been able to do anything like that.
Remind me at some point, you haven't been here since Alan built me the new computer, and it's a nice little toy. That thing's nice for all those games. And I can even play Titanfall now on PC. It'd be nice. So anyway, I'm going to move on. Shane is here in the house to because I know he wanted to talk about a particular iPhone game that he's been playing lately. So I want to give him a chance here. Shane, how you doing?
Hello.
Welcome. So what have you been playing this week?
I've been playing Record Run.
Record Run. This is a Harmonix's iPhone game, right?
Yes, I got an email about it, and I was like, might as well try it out. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really fun.
Yeah.
It's, I guess, one of those running style games. I've never really played one before. But, I don't know, it's music-y, and it's a little bit, I don't know, complicated at times, trying to figure out the right path.
Right.
It's fun.
How does the game kind of work?
You have two lanes. You switch between them. You need to switch between them to avoid obstacles. The obstacles can be either dodged by moving left or right, jumped over, or slid under. So you have to figure out the best path sometimes because two obstacles may come up at once. And you need to... everything's on the beat, and you need to be able to hit these green sections each time. So, like, there could be a dog in the way, and there's a green section right before him. So you either have to dodge left or right or jump over him.
Okay. If you wouldn't mind coming over here, because that one's not picking you up so well. It's more tuned for Jason, so I'm going to give you this microphone instead because you're coming through a little bit quiet. But what's kind of the free-to-play element of it? Like, how is Harmonix going to make their money off it?
You can buy these things called like backstage passes, which unlock extra features like what can you unlock? Characters, these different versions of your character when you get into this like hyper mode. You can buy new spots to put your own music into it, and you can buy records, which is kind of like the currency.
All right. So I'm assuming you're recommending Record Run to other people?
Yeah, it's free. Might as well. I haven't paid any money in it, and I have 4 songs of my own in it, and the songs it comes with aren't that bad.
All right, well, I got to get you back if you're around on the show later on at the top of Part B to talk about our road trip yesterday, because that was something else, too.
I have to say, I saw Shane in a suit.
Did you really?
He didn't see me, but I saw him. And ironically, the blue. But I have to say, the computer you were on was the same one I was on.
All right. Let's get back.
This is Locat stuff.
You guys go have coffee later. All right. Let's get back into our gaming weeks. Loki, how was your gaming week? I guess mostly programming, right?
Yep. Didn't play anything.
What?
Programming.
This programming thing has really taken over.
Yeah.
How many hours did you spend programming this week?
I have no idea.
Lost count.
I have no idea. I don't keep track because it's hard between, like, you know, the baby, and I stay up late sometimes. And I don't know.
All right.
I did a lot of modeling in SketchUp. I changed my idea for how I was going to... Originally, I was going to go with voxels for everything. And still, technically, it's voxels. But instead of just it being all cubic voxels, it's 20 different primitives I'm working with. So it should make it look interesting, yet keep it simple around, like, very simple, low-poly looking.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
All right. Well, I won't bug you more about it, but I look forward to having something I can play soon, Loki.
I'm working on it. I'm trying.
You're worse than Blizzard. All right. Moving on. My gaming week. I'll try to be quick. Speaking of Blizzard, I was able to get into the beta for Heroes of the Storm, which is Blizzard's version of League of Legends or Defense of the Ancients 2, which makes sense because the original Defense of the Ancients, if you remember, was a mod for Warcraft 3. So Blizzard has a lot of interest in this. I really like Heroes of the Storm, and a big part of the reason why I like it is because it took a lot of the complication out of a game like League of Legends and Dota, which I understand are not that complicated games to begin with, but for me, who's not very good at them, like, I gotta say, like, in my experience, Dota 2, very complicated. Like, very, like, you wanna kill minions right on the last beat to get the gold, you gotta do everything at the store, you send your thing to fetch back and forth. That's not a bad thing. I'm just saying, for people who are getting into these games for the first time, it can be a lot, especially when the community is demanding when you're going to be playing versus games.
Don't sugarcoat it. Those games are very fucking technically, like, very specific in their nature and very technical.
The reality is the communities make them very high pressure
as
well. League of Legends, you know, has a huge reputation for that, and I would say League of Legends is probably the next most difficult. Well, here's the thing with Heroes of the Storm. There's no shops in Heroes of the Storm, which is a huge managing mechanic in the other games. And at first, I was kind of like, well, how that everything's going to be so vanilla with that. But no, what they do is that as you level up, you know, you get your talents automatically. It's not even like League of Legends, but you kind of choose, like, do you want this or this? Like, it pops up in the corner. Do you want A or B? And so you select, and then you move on. And then when you gain another level, what do you want, A or B? So it's kind of a different way to kind of micromanage as you go. And it, for me, it works, like, a lot better. Like, I was able to pick up Heroes of the Storm way easier than I was the other two games. And I actually feel like my first versus match, which was really high pressure, of course, we were losing, and there was that, most of the people were actually really nice. 4 of the 5 of us were all really nice, having a good time, but there was that one guy that was like, way to go, guys, that's what happens, we don't see anybody at the bottom lane, you know, he's doing his whole thing, but we turned it around and we won. And of course, he was like,
good job, guys. Good comeback.
It may have taken 30 minutes, but we finally got it. But yeah, I mean, that like just the adrenaline rush that kind of came from that, where like, fuck yeah, we turned it around and I helped. It's shake and bake and I helped. In this case, we're talking about, you know, baking the other team, but it felt really good. And yeah, I had a great time with it. So I got to say, I think Blizzard's got something really cool on its hands here. It is, you know, it's right now in technical alpha, so you kind of have to be lucky to get in, although it seems like they let in a lot more people this past week, because I know a lot of people that got in the past week. And it seems like they're going to make their money in a similar way to League of Legends by selling characters and character skins. And like the mount that you can use, you just get this generic brown horse. But you guys, in the store right now, they're selling a rainbow unicorn, and I kind of have to have it. I really have to have it. You don't understand. Like one
Rob.
Of the, what? No, I need water, shelter, and a rainbow unicorn to live. It's not asking too much.
Did you know
what?
In America, we have gallon tanks of water, and all we do is shit in it. And in other countries, they have no water.
But do they shit rainbows, Dark Sakura? Because
no.
This thing does. Anyway, so that was pretty much that. I was playing Heroes of the Storm. SSG100 Matt in our chat says Heroes of the Storm looked like a lot of fun at PAX East this year. You know, I was skeptical, but I gotta say, I'm a fan. So between that and Diablo 3, you might have thought I was no longer a Blizzard fan when I canceled my WoW account, but they managed to get me back, those little bastards. And Gamer Girl says, Rainbow Dash get. Oh, Lord, don't you guys make it about that.
Don't infect this show with your bronyism.
No, I think it's funny.
Even the Rainbow Dash is pretty cool.
Anyway, there was other stuff too, but in the interest of time, I want to move into the news. I will say quickly, Final Fantasy XIV, play more of that on the PlayStation 4. How much do I love that Share Factory that they put out for free on the PlayStation 4? That is a powerful little thing that's like, it's like better than Windows Movie Maker, and it's so easy to use. Which
everything is better than Windows Movie Maker.
Which it might not be as good as Premiere, but it's, I mean, the fact that they have all these.
It's no iMovie.
They have all these. It's no iMovie. It's really not. But they have it. They actually, I will say this, though. They put in a lot of templates like iMovie does so that you can put in these, you know, very powerful looking things like PlayStation logos that go wah, wah, and they spin around and it changes from one to the other. And I put together really quickly this movie on PlayStation 4 of me fighting different Final Fantasy bosses. Last night, I went and I fought Moogle Mog and Titan and Leviathan. And what I did is I saved clips and I strung them all together with Share Factory. And I produced this clip that's on my YouTube. So cheap plug. You can check me out on YouTube at user Rob Roberts Plays, all one word. And I just put a video up of Final Fantasy 14 that I did 100% on the PlayStation 4. Exported it to a USB stick, put it on my computer, and uploaded that file that Share Factory put onto YouTube. So I gotta say, I'm super impressed with that Share Factory stuff.
Is that the only way to get PlayStation 4 saved content onto YouTube?
Holy
crap.
I think so at this point.
That is a buff freaking horse.
Oh, you got the rainbow unicorn?
Well, no, someone in the chat linked it.
Oh, thank you.
That is like the angriest unicorn I've ever seen. And he has sparkles floating around his butt.
Now, the angriest unicorn I've ever seen happened to be in Cabin in the Woods. And it was hilarious.
Good movie. Good
All right.
Movie.
So anyway, I gotta say, the only downside to Share Factory is that, and it's
was Dungeon Buster that linked it.
Thank you, Dungeon Buster. It's a tricky one to bitch about, but the only downside is that the number of templates are so limited right now. Like you have your generic PS4, your generic Share Factory, your infamous Second Son template, and your Playroom. I think the other one's Playroom. That's it. You have like the four templates, which they look really good, but the problem is, with all these people making content in Share Factory out of four templates.
Ironically, yeah. It's the Windows Movie Maker problem where every yes. YouTube movie starts with a blue background
yes.
and a shadow dual
yes.
text. My latest video.
Yes, that's...
Funny compilation. Fail compilation. Hey.
So if they're smart, they're going to start selling. I really should not say this because I shouldn't give them ideas how to take my money, but I'm going to just keep it real. Like, if they can make money selling user icons...
I mean, that fits into the minis yeah. thing that they were doing well, for a while, and I think they still do.
They could charge $1.49 for, like, here's three Final Fantasy 14 templates for your Share Factories. And I'd be like, done. Ka-ching. I'd buy them. I would. Cause
That's
I'd...
like 6 months of ad revenue.
Yeah, right? You asshole. All right. Anyhow.
It's telling it like it is.
All right. So that's Share Factory and PlayStation 4. We got to get into gaming news. I'll just say really quick for housekeeping. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/OLR. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/Orange Lounge Radio. We may be off for a week coming up. It's a busy week for a lot of people, though. But I will have I'll have the confirmation on that next week if we're going to be here or not. And I'll let you know when that is. But I don't want to panic nobody yet. But if we do end up taking it off, I'm going to explain why and all that, and I should know for sure next week. Anyhow, moving on. I want to talk about news. That's it. That's it. I talked about Twitter. I talked about Facebook.com/Orange Lounge Radio and Google Plus. Google.com/Orange Lounge Radio.
And we had our interview, so we got through that.
We got through that. So I think we're good to start with some news. Let's do it. We're only an hour into the show. Loki, let's get to it.
All right, so Nintendo announced new Pokemon games, and by new I mean that they're putting them out later this year. But they are remakes of two classic Pokemon games from the Game Boy Advance, Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire, and now coming out under the new names Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. And they are completely remade and will be on the 3DS in November. And, yeah. So I guess, I don't know, I'm not too familiar with the Pokemon series, but it's cool for those people that never played the Game Boy Advance version, because it came out over 10 years ago.
Hmm.
But this kind of goes back in the line of, well, I mean, I guess they completely remade them, but minimal effort. It's a remake, though. Maybe it's using the X and Y engine or something, but I don't know.
Well, it's a bummer Shane left, because I would have loved to hear his opinion on this, because he didn't seem too excited about it, because he's like, Ruby and Sapphire are not even the strongest games in the series, but he said if they put Mega Evolutions in it, he'll be sold.
Maybe.
And Jason's like, you're speaking foreign languages right now.
Hey, to me, what? Too.
You mean there's 152 Pokemon?
There's like 700.
Yeah, there are.
And Shane has them all. He got them all this week. Like the song says, gotta catch them all. Shane's like, anyway.
So, yeah. So anyway, so that's what's up there.
Yeah.
Yes,
nice.
Lots of fun stuff with Pokemon. I just think that they figured out, it's not like they figured out. They're all, we know Pokemon sells a lot of money, or makes us a lot of money, so we're going to put out another Pokemon game. Crap, we don't have a new one. Just remake one of the old ones. Done.
I don't know, because I think back and I go, well, there was Fire Red and Leaf Green or whatever it was that were remakes of Red and Blue, the very, very originals, and they turned out pretty good. So, I mean, if it can take that, they're not always like just straight up remakes. There's usually something new about it.
No, it's a completely, it's done like, the style of X and Y.
Well, yeah, exactly. And X and Y, I mean, those feel like completely different games than the older ones, So I think it's a smart way to get a new game out fast, to keep the fans happy, but not have to totally do something from scratch.
It concerns me for one reason only, is because this is coming out fourth quarter for them, November, kind of like that big prime time. So do they just not have a big prime, quarter four game coming out, that this is what they're working on instead? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my thing. I know Smash Brothers coming out in the summer, but we haven't really heard of anything else that's kind of upcoming that for 3DS, it's still not out yet. I mean, I'd assume maybe like another Mario Brothers game, maybe.
Well, that may be the case. I think there's an even simpler answer. They want as many Pokemon games as they can. It's unfortunately in reaching saturation territory, but whether they have a Christmas lineup or not, they want a Pokemon game.
Pokemon fans, and there are a lot. Just get a Tumblr account and you'll see. There's a lot of Pokemon fans out there. They don't care. They don't see the saturation like you see it.
Yet
it's like DDR. It's like DDR, Jason.
Didn't drive itself into the ground.
Well, but if they put it when they were putting out new DDR games every year, we were like, yes, gimme.
Yeah.
But everybody else out there is like, again.
I just think that's a silly argument because
yeah,
I absolutely. Considering I've owned all of three Pokemon games,
Yes, they should talk. Madden fans, Call of Duty fans, all those
three
other
studios for a new release every single year.
All those other, all right.
Let me get some comments from chat. ActDev says Ruby and Sapphire aren't the best of the main games, to be honest, but I'm curious to see how they remake them. And Rama says they're going to remake all of the Pokemon games on 3DS to make it easier to collect all of the generations. Those comments from live.vognetwork.com. I do see that end of it. Like, I know it's possible to get the Pokemon. It's not easy to get them from start. Actually, I think you can't go all the way back to the Game Boy ones.
Yet.
But like from the Advance, there's a way to do it. Now they have that whole channel, the Pokemon Cloud they want people to be using. And
I have another theory on that, though, but we'll be getting to that later. That
all right.
There may be ways to get those other Pokemon
Fuck, I know exactly what it's going to be, too. Hold that thought, folks. We'll come back to it later. All right. In the meantime, speaking of music games, this news has been getting a lot of coverage this week, and this is about the return of Amplitude. Maybe. Harmonix went to Kickstarter this week to announce that they are interested in creating Amplitude, but they can only do it if they get the funding for it. They are asking for $775,000 to make Amplitude. It would be a sequel. It would be available on the PlayStation 3 and the PlayStation 4. It will simply be called Amplitude. To answer some of the big questions that come up, yes, it is a Sony exclusive because Sony had funded the original games, so Sony is a stakeholder in the IP. So that means PC version, Xbox version, not likely. It would be something that would be stuck to the PlayStation platforms. They're not talking a lot about licensed music. They're only talking about in-house music at this point. I get the sense that's probably because licensed music is a stretch goal. Here's the interesting thing about it. I was convinced after the first day this thing was going to blow through the roof and get funded because it took off like a rocket, and KickTrack was projecting it at like $1.2 million at one point. Well, here we are with 11 days to go. They are only at $205,000 as of the time of this broadcast. They may only make about, if KickTrack is to be believed, $550,000. Now, maybe I'm part of the problem. I didn't donate to the Kickstarter. And I'm not going to. And Jason's giving me the finger as a result. But here's the thing. You know, you can get mad all you want. But, well, A, it's my money. I'll spend it how I want. I'm not going to tell you what you spend your money on. But, you know, you don't tell me how to spend my money, right? But here's the thing. It's not that I dislike Harmonix or I hate Harmonix. Absolutely not. I love Harmonix. I support it. I've bought almost every single game they've put out there. I'm just kind of over Kickstarter. And I don't like the trends that Kickstarter is setting, and I'm really worried about other opportunists in the gaming industry should this be successful. And I realize Harmonix is one company, but you guys have to understand where these companies go, other will follow. And people see the success of things like Ouya. People see the success of things like Mighty No. 9 and so on and so on. And we're going to start turning to Kickstarter. And although I made these very tongue-in-cheek sarcastic tweets earlier in the week about, oh, well, you know, if you want to see that Final Fantasy VII reboot happen, then you better get to Kickstarter now. And for only $40, you can get a potion to revive Aeris. Like, I don't really think that's going to happen, people, but I worry that that is that path we're starting to go down. And I do, and I don't feel bad. Like, it's like, I want to support Harmonix. This is not the way I would choose to support them. And it leaves us in this very difficult situation, because if they don't make the money, then they can't prove that people want the game. Therefore, they're not going to make the game. And I have to ask a very tough question that nobody wants to hear, especially people that have listened to this show or Bobby's show for a very long time. Is it possible that the investors are right? That maybe music games are done for now?
It's 100% the case. We, like, it sucks to say any bit of this as a fan, but I am absolutely aware of the fact that I'm into things that the vast majority of people are not. I am vastly aware that I'm surprised that there was even Amplitude, because I'm pretty sure Frequency was not what certainly didn't sell more, and if it did, not by a particularly large margin. Mm. These are largely unknown games. They got a bump from being a broadband adapter capable game, and the fact that they were able to wrangle in POD and Blink and everybody else that actually made it onto that soundtrack, Oakenfold and so on and so forth, in addition to their in-house stuff. But it's like, comments about the game aside, because I believe everybody in this room absolutely adores both of those games, if you build your business on losing propositions, you're not going to have a business for very long.
Right.
Sucks to say. I have not backed it yet. I have not come to a conclusion yet.
Interesting. Here's the thing. If I was able to be an investor in the game, I have about $300 extra right now that I could throw at this. That if I could be an investor in the game and I could get, you know, some of the money back that I put in the game from the extra sales I do, even if
you won't get, you'll get material goods back.
Because of the Kickstarter model. Right. That's the thing.
It's also, I don't think it's also legal to do that.
Probably not.
Sort of thing.
Probably. So. I'm not telling you if it is or isn't legal. I'm saying if I could do that, I would. I can't, so I didn't. So that's the reality of the situation. Going to our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com. Let's see. Bobby Blackwolf says, Sky, then perhaps the failing of Amplitude will be a good thing. This is going to sound very cruel to a company I like a lot. But yes, I am saying that. Maybe it will be a good thing.
There's a lot of tech companies right now. I think Google has even done this. I've been in the middle of this. The way that Google put it is that they celebrate their failures. And considering the news in the last week or two about the fact that the Earth will not, that the Googleverse will not revolve around Google Plus, celebrate that failure. Sorry, guys. No, I don't think that celebrating your failures is a good thing, but a failure teaches you just as much, if not more, than a success does. Mm-hmm. And they had critically acclaimed games that didn't hit their sales numbers, and if enough people cannot come together to bring this game back, they don't have options. It goes back on the shelf. If they reapproach it in 5 years, great, that's their decision. If they don't, they were good games.
And let me say this too, as well, is that, you know, there's just a lot about this Kickstarter that's a tough pill to swallow. And again, it's so hard for me to get out here because I love Harmonix. I want to support them. I've bought almost every single Harmonix game that's out there except Karaoke Revolution Country. I'm not going to do that. But like everything else they put out there, I've supported. And I also played the Record Run game this week and I like it and so on and so on. And so it's very tough for me. But this is not how I would choose to spend my money because I have been burned before. I backed a game in November of 2012 for $60. I am still waiting on the game. And I'm not interested as a consumer of paying for a good I'm not going to see for a year and a half. A video game, anyway, you know, and other types of goods, you have to kind of take it case by case. But as far as a video game entertainment, which is a very instant gratification industry goes, I'm not interested in waiting a year and a half.
I was just thinking about the last thing that I paid for in advance.
Mm-hmm.
I keep thinking about my medical insurance.
Well, there's that, or there's like traveling, you know, my plane ticket to Dragon Con I have to buy in advance, but it's like, it's different. Like it's, you can't compare, it's like apples and oranges. It's very different, you know? Travel is something, I mean, you can buy it at the last minute, but it's usually something that's planned.
How early entertainment did you pre-order your PS3 when it came out?
I didn't pre-order it. I bought it after it was out.
Well, we ordered ours about 7 months before it came out.
I don't usually pre-order games at all. I will within the same week, but only to guarantee release day delivery if I'm going that route with it. Otherwise,
what about Shaq Fu, Rob?
Well, you want to talk about games that shouldn't even at all be funded. I mean,
I'm going to play the crap out of that.
But here's the thing. What did I talk about earlier in the show? Perception. And there's a lot of problems with this Kickstarter. A, it's only 18 days. I understand there's reasons for that, that, you know, they have to allocate jobs, they have to do that. But the reality is most people, when they're ready to open their wallets and do it, don't care about the reasons. Perceptions. Again, instant gratification, the gamer world. 18 days was probably not enough time for this. This is something that should have been given the full 30. The licensed music, the lack thereof, with all respect to the in-house Harmonix music team who does meet great music, it's not enough to get excited about, like the soundtrack to the Frequency and Amplitude games. And I can't preview those songs in advance. I'm going out on a limb, hoping the quality will be good.
One of the either four-figure or five-figure backings in there is to choose songs. And I think
that's like for your band. They have to be things that you own the license to, I'm pretty sure.
And even with a pre-order, at least if you're pre-ordering something, you can always cancel that pre-order. Not so much on Kickstarter.
So, and you know, everybody has been, you know, a lot of people were burned by the whole Ouya thing and everything. So look, I don't want to dump on or kick or poo poo on this Kickstarter, because I realize a lot of people are excited about it, putting their money to it. And there is a part of me that hopes it happens. I hope you will just respect my decision to not participate, because this is not a model that I want to continue to invest in as a consumer.
They can respect it, but whether or not they choose to do the same is a completely different thing.
Correct.
And Amplitude, as it was originally released, was a downright amazing mm-hmm. game. Mm-hmm. And the future success of a remake has nothing to do with that.
No. So all I'm just going to say is I'm going to say educate yourself. Try to see past the perceptions. Go out there, look into the Kickstarter, look into everything, and make an educated decision with your wallet. And if you choose to fund the game, more power to you. I hope they're able to get the money. If you don't choose to fund the game because you feel maybe similar to me or for other different reasons, for whatever it may be, then that's your right too.
If someone puts out the money and it doesn't reach the goal, they're not out anything.
Correct. Correct.
And if it reaches the goal, then they're going to get what they want.
But I can't put the money in going, well, maybe it'll go, or maybe, no, I have to go in knowing, okay, this money is going to get deducted from my bank account. Like, I can't put money in thinking it's not really going to get deducted. Like, I can't do that logically. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but I mean, either way, you know that you're either going to get the product you want or your money back.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to when, that's just a matter of if you want that instant gratification or not.
Well, at least with Harmonix, you're probably certain to get the product that you kickstarted. Not always true for everyone.
That's true. I will say that, at least Harmonix. Now, and I just want to, in the interest of time, we're running so long tonight, we got to get to these other stories. But I do want to just clarify, I have supported other Kickstarters in the past, and I have had people on the show here talking about their Kickstarters. One Kickstarter I strongly believed in that I supported was the GamerX Kickstarter. But granted, that wasn't a game, that was a convention, that was a new company, that was something that had never been done before, and that was just, it was just different. And because of the fact that it was something new that didn't exist, that was people coming together for this idea, that I knew I'd be getting these tangible tickets and exactly what they'd be going towards, and it was an idea I myself, if I had the time or money, would have liked to have planned or have, you know, been, you know, a part of creating, then I was like, yeah, all right, I'll give the money to it.
Can we all just agree that it's a good thing Harmonix didn't make us do a 100,000-person petition and then a 200,000-person pre-order?
Isn't that what Konami did back in Seventh Style or whatever?
That was a joke.
Yeah, no, I know. So it's not like, and guess what? I didn't participate with that either. So, all right.
Shocking.
All right, anyhow, I want to move on. I'm sure we've got some strong feelings on that, so you can always email us. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com. Let's move on with more news. Dark Sakura.
You know they really don't like in Russia?
Hmm.
Uglies of the same of one gender bumping with uglies of the same gender.
Hmm.
Even when they are pixelated and actually not even rendered into the character. Meaning that Sims 4, when it is released, is going to be adults only in Russia because of the gay... The gay. Because they're assholes over there. Not meaning everybody in Russia is an asshole, but everyone who supported this law is an asshole.
The regulating body is an yeah. asshole. Yes.
And basically that has to go just along with the 2010 law saying that it's not okay to be gay in Russia.
So because it's adults only, does that mean it can still buy it? I mean, it's just going to be rated.
If you're an adult, I guess.
That's all right. No one ever pays attention to the ESRB rating, so whatever their local rating system there is, I'm sure no one gives a crap. So,
isn't an AO rating going to make people want to buy it more?
Not necessarily. We'll see. Like,
Putin is an asshole, Bobby. I agree.
Like, for console games, AO is like death, but for PC, who gives a shit? It's on PC.
Yeah.
You know, unless EA's like, we're not going to sell our own game. They're going to have that shit on fucking Origin, so just buy it digitally, because most likely you're just getting a fucking key anyways that you're gonna have to download it digitally. So
isn't piracy kind of rampant in Russia anyway?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a statement that they've made.
Mm-hmm.
They've made a lot of statements, and most of them are stupid. International incident time.
All right, let's travel around the world and check out some release dates of
dear KGB. Bobby didn't say that.
Let's travel around the room and check out some release dates of games that will be coming out to your door, maybe rated AO or not, starting in the U.S., Loki.
Borderlands 2 is coming out this week on Vita, so that's pretty sweet. And then finally, if you didn't purchase the digital version of it, the disc version of Minecraft, the PlayStation 3 edition, will be out on Friday. that would be it.
Woo!
That's not a lot. It's a slow week.
Yeah, I mean, the week after that's Wolfenstein, so it's some
things get busy.
And then
there.
Watch Dogs.
So. Isn't there like a beta for...
I was going to say the same thing. Next week isn't Wolfenstein. Next week is Doom 4.
Yeah, just I was going to say, is the Doom 4 preview?
It's not Doom 4, because the beta... It's available at a later date. So
it's the same scheme that the Halo beta did at Crackdown. Was it?
Crackdown
was
awesome.
Part of it. Oh no! Don't get me wrong.
It was just an added bonus.
Yeah, most people bought Crackdown for Halo, but it was like, oh hey, I got a good game.
No,
with
what
my
was
Halo
the one
demo?
That was with the Final Fantasy VII demo? That was the
Brave Fencer Musashi. That was
that?
Yeah.
That was Musashi.
That was 8. No, that was 8. I don't remember what was 7.
Seven was Tobalt. No. To ball number 2, I think.
Was it?
Maybe. Okay.
In Japan.
Well, speaking of Japan, let's check out the release dates over in Japan on the PlayStation 3 this week. I mean, screw all these other releases. There's only one game any of you give a shit about in Japan this week. And on the PlayStation 3, that's the Idolmaster One for All is out this week. That's right, Idolmaster fans. You can get a controller with this or a special little... Okay. Idolmaster's got a new game out in Japan this week on the 15th. Check that out. You could also check out Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed, as well as Geke Juban Macross 30th
Macross, Macross.
Puta Box. That's a Blu-ray / hybrid disc.
What?
So that's the whole, like, series
Want.
Plus game.
Want.
So that's pretty cool.
Well, someone get that for me.
Only $300 to import.
I don't care. Give.
Money's not an object. Rob, you just said you could come up with $300.
Fuck the Kickstarter. Rob, get me that game. No, I'm kidding.
All right. On the PlayStation Vita, pretty busy week in Japan there with the God of War collection hitting the Vita, as well as Genkai Sotsuki Moro Chronicle in regular and limited edition. There's also some like pouches and other accessories coming out in Japan this week for the Vita. On the Wii U this week, yes, a Wii U release in Japan, Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed finally makes its way to Japan. And lastly, I was going to read 3DS releases, but it looks like there is nothing there. So that's it for Japanese releases. How about the UK, Dark Sakura?
Well, there's some stuff. On the 11th, we have Kero Blaster on PC and Gero Blaster on iPhone. I don't know if that's just a typo. On the 12th, we have The Last Tinker, City of Colors on PC. The 14th, Cell Damage HD on a bunch of stuff. The 15th, Hellraid, The Escape. And am I missing it? Yeah, there's still more. 16th, Kirby Triple Deluxe. And that's it. Because Act Deft would probably cry if I missed out on Kirby.
He would. He would drive up here and kick your butt. I think.
He should drive up here and try to kick my butt. It's not going to happen, but he should drive up here anyway.
But then you'll hug it out and go out for food.
By kicking my butt, I mean hug with tacos.
All right.
Bring me a taco. And Akuma JP, I agree, Minmay is stupid. I don't think she's a bitch, she's just stupid.
Those comments from our chat room at live.vognetwork.com.
We're talking about Macross.
I know.
Macross.
All right, just a couple more news stories for you guys, and then the classic game of the week, Loki.
So Nintendo is still trying to convince you, hey, we did not make an error in judgment in putting a game system out with this wonderful Wii U gamepad. And they're going to do that by showing compelling reasons that the tablet controller is there. And really just showing, you know, games that are only possible by having the tablet controller.
Like Go. Woo. Or Othello.
I just...
Whatever.
I honestly... I don't know. It's okay. I mean, it's cool. If they really do have some great ideas. Yeah.
Skepticism all the skepticism aside, when you look at something like Nintendo Land is still a great party game. Like, you know, some of those like chase games and things, and yeah, they're only possible with a tablet controller.
I have no problem with that. You see, and that's some of the things too. Like, you know, Nintendo first party, you know, launch titles have some great ideas and implementations for things. Like, you know, for example, like Sight Truck had MP3 support on the SD card. I was like, sweet, that's a perfect reason to have that SD card slot. And then no other game except for Endless Ocean used that feature. It's like, okay.
Some third parties have done it too, though. Zombie U was really rad with that controller, actually. It's kind of a bummer it didn't do better.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying, you know, that all games aren't using this to its fullest. It's just a lot of them aren't. And honestly, like, you know, the examples that they had with was it We Party You and stuff like that, where it's just, hey, look, I can play, you know, air hockey on this thing. Yeah, well, you can do that on iPad too. So why exactly do you need to buy this system? I just want to see something that's really, really unique that's like, okay, I mean, that's the thing I've always been saying about the Wii U. It needs a hook, you know, whereas the Wii was like, okay, you can play games completely different than, you know, or in a completely new way than you've been playing games before. That was its hook. Wii U was like, you can play games with a second screen. Well, it's like, shit, I already did this with the 3DS, and I've, you know, we're talking tablet controls, I've already done this with, you know, a tablet. So what's the hook? There wasn't one, and so that's they need is a hook. So hopefully they will provide that. Otherwise, I think they're just wasting more time. So we'll see.
We will see. I mean, if this Amplitude Kickstarter we talked about earlier is making anything kind of realistic, it is expensive to make a game. And it kind of goes to show, like, wow, when we're talking like $750,000 to make a game on a console, this is what the third parties are really having to kind of question. Am I going to make that money back when the console isn't, you know, out on all these?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, with third parties, I think have been really struggling with coming up with things to do with that tablet controller. And a lot of it's just been like, you know, like, for example, the Batman game that came with Armor Edition. Ooh, I can control, you know, the Batarang, you know, on there with the accelerometer. Well, yeah, you could do that on the PS3 as well. That's not really anything new or unique. It's just, I don't know, kind of gimmicky. But I hope that they do more stuff because they really need some help. I mean, it's going to take a lot of convincing, you know, the public why they need that system. And they're not really doing that right now.
I hope Mario Kart 8 really changes some minds for Nintendo's sake. I hope it does, because you know, I'm still like I said earlier, I'm still cheering on Nintendo. But sometimes,
what unique things are they doing with the tablet controller for that game aside from second screen play? You know, anything? Do I get an awesome track editor that can build the track in the, you know, the tablet? Nope.
Although, Loki, second screen play is still kind of rad. I mean, the fact that you can have the two TVs without actually needing two TVs is kind of cool. Like, you know, but again, it's that whole party game atmosphere. It's great for when I have friends over, but for when I'm playing by myself, not a lot I can do with that, right?
It's funny. I was going to make the same argument for Smash Brothers. What's that going to do? Particularly interesting. Even second screen for Smash Brothers 3DS.
Could be item usage or something. Who knows?
Yeah, they'll probably push all the stats down there and keep the upper screen for the entire canvas of gameplay and nothing else.
It could be. We'll see. All right. Well, something else Nintendo has in the works that we'll probably see something about at E3. And I have a feeling Loki might have a comment or two on this. Nintendo is working on some figurines. Think Skylanders. Think Disney Infinity. To work with both the Wii U and the 3DS. The Wii U already supports this. I don't know if you know that, but there's a little logo on the Wii U gamepad for the near field communication. It's just, I don't think anything's using it right now except, oh, there was a Pokemon Rumble U or whatever. It kind of didn't do well, but also Nintendo did a really shitacious job promoting that compared to Skylanders. Or didn't they make it a GameStop exclusive? Well, that's your first problem.
Well, they made the character as a GameStop exclusive.
That's your first problem, but let's let me move on. Anyhow, so now they're going to try it again, I guess. These NFC games, the reader and the writer will be due the first half of 2015. Infrared will be used to communicate with the 3DS. It's like a separate little thing. On the Wii U side, the gamepad has it built in. The character figurines, which Nintendo is going to call NFP, Nintendo Figurine Platform, are going to launch at the end of this year. Some of these games will show up at E3. The big takeaway from this to note is that it doesn't appear to be just one game. Here's a quote from Satoru Iwata. In other words, the figurines, which consumers buy and collect, are going to work with multiple software titles to be released in the future. And we are aiming to develop more software titles compatible with the figurines. Nintendo has a lot of well-known character IP that has originated in video games, and we have been regularly releasing titles from game franchises that make use of this character IP. This is why I believe a brand new type of platform will be born when the character IP becomes compatible with NFP. Could this be what you were alluding to earlier with Pokemon?
Yes, it is. It's exactly what I'm alluding to, because don't think for a second that they're not going to put Pokemon on this ship.
It's the most obvious franchise.
It's definitely obvious. And that's how else am I going to get, you know, how else am I going to collect them all if I can't play those games on Game Boy Advance anymore? Well, I can buy the figurines, which will unlock it in the game.
You know, somebody put a tweet out this week that said, what game would you like to see use this and Nintendo technology in or whatever? What game would you like? And I said, well, I would like to see a new F-Zero game where I can have all the cars and drivers as little figurines. I'm like, I don't care if I have to buy a bunch of shitty little figures to get a new F-Zero game. Give it to me now.
I'm putting on my devil horns. Guess how you're going to choose your character in Smash Brothers.
With dumb little figures?
And guess the only way you're going to be able to choose your character in Smash Brothers.
No. Nintendo is not that dumb.
I'm joking, of course. Well, unfortunately, because Smash Brothers is such a specific type of game, and, you know, the shifts from Melee to Brawl weren't... There was the level editor, and there was the Subspace Emissary. The things that they can change in that game to take advantage of technologies... cannot possibly be excessive. So choose your character after you buy the figurines.
Because they just said that, you know, it wasn't going to be available until 2015. For one, here's what I'm worried about.
Future-proofing feature.
We haven't seen a Wii U Animal Crossing game yet, have we?
Stop right now. I want you to take that thought train and make a U-turn. Do not. Do not.
Because Animal Crossing has always been a few and far between.
Yeah, but that's how are we gonna console. You know, that's they're gonna.
Don't you understand where he's going with this?
I don't actually.
The figurines would be Animal Crossing. You want all these little things to actually put in your village? You got to have the dumb little figure. You just made
the same argument that I did for Smash Bros.
Well, here's the thing: is once again, this goes back to a gimmick. They at this point they don't need to introduce more gimmicks because it's not helping. What is this going to add to my gameplay? First off, if it's going to let's just play devil's advocate here and say that it's going to work like Skylanders or Disney Infinity, it's not going to fucking work with that stupid the Wii U tablet, because I'm playing on the tablet, that figurine's going to fall right the fuck off. So that's not going to make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
So they've got to be using this for like saving or moving your data around. I'm thinking it's very similar.
You could do that in a Wii controller.
Exactly. I'm thinking it's very similar to what they're doing with the Wii controller, but they're just using it now where you can, they're saying, oh, you can move your Mii across or something like that. Or, mm-hmm. you know, you can move your data around. They're doing the same way they have with the controller. That way, you know, I just don't think they're going to implement this in a smart way, because look how late they're getting into this. And this is Nintendo. They don't seem to... They kind of take the ideas, but they don't quite run with them in the right way.
For the record, there were Animal Crossing figurines in Japan that sold quite well.
What did they do, though?
They didn't do anything. They're just little figures. Hmm. And people bought them and collected them. They came with some of the furniture that was in the games, as well as many of the little characters that were in the games, including remakes of the ones from the anime movie that came out. And you could buy them and mix and match your whole little sets.
I think you just hit the nail on the head of what game's getting this treatment. I think you guys have just... I mean, she makes a good case. They've already done this in Japan.
I will have a Margie.
I think it will be more than just Animal Crossing, but I could just see them... It's just, you know, they just see that it's, you know, extremely popular on Skylanders and Disney Infinity, and they're making a ton of money off of those characters alone, not even necessarily the software, and they want to get in on it. That's all it is. But I think they're just jumping into it, and they don't really know how they're going to implement it or what they're going to do. I think it's going to be shoehorned into a lot of things.
Right.
It's not going to make sense unless they come out with this brand new game that, you know, is like a Skylanders or something like that. Then that might make sense. Hey, I don't know, new Mario RPG or something.
A new IP wouldn't be bad.
It would be nice, but I'm concerned that Nintendo is very, you know, famous for coming out with these really weird gimmicky things sometimes. You know, even like the Wii Vitality sensor, you know, when they were originally pitching that idea and stuff. And I'm just worried that it's just not going to be implemented well, whatever it is.
Last thought on this, Jason.
I don't think I ever really compared consoles and tech, the larger tech accessory and hardware kind of worlds that much until just now. A lot of that has to do with the fact that consoles can introduce newer tech and experiments. More ports, more communication, more interconnectivity is now possible in the console world. This is the same argument as the Pebble and the Galaxy Gear and all of the other smartwatches that are making the rounds right now. And that the first one or two see their successes. The Pebble has seen, it got crowdfunded and it has seen moderate success. We're already coming to the second version of their product. But everybody else has just failed fantastically.
Well, there's huge rumors that Apple wants in that world.
Rumors,
yeah. All right.
We'll know in WWDC very, very soon.
Anyhow, curious what you guys think about this whole Nintendo NFC and NFP and whatever other acronyms they have involved
and
in this.
NFQ and NFZ.
You know, I don't give an F-U-C-K about some of this, but you can email us if you have some thoughts about where they should go with this or if it's a good thing. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com. Let's travel back to a time. We're going to go way back tonight, y'all. Get ready. We're going way back tonight.
Not as far back as the radar game.
Yeah, but it's pretty far back, Darsaga. We're going back to a time when you didn't need figurines to play a freaking game. You just needed letters. Because this game was made of nothing but letters.
And rectangular
in some
blocks.
Versions. In yeah. some versions.
It is the classic game of the week. And Dark Soccer has picked a game this week that's so classic, I don't have a YouTube for it. God, that
exactly.
makes this job easy.
The only YouTube that I found was set to Puff the Magic Dragon. And I was like, no.
All right.
We're not going there.
Dark Soccer. Well, you could use Christopher Tin's music as a background music when you play this
play
game.
Play something. Pick something.
I don't have... You get Oha Candy.
No, I meant...
I don't have permission.
Play something from Tron.
I don't have permissions from the peoples to play
something
the other
from
stuff.
Tron.
Something from Tron.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here it is. Your classic game of the week, Darsaga.
For the record, I've been listening to a whole crapload of Wendy Carlos over the last week. Just saying.
You?
So the game is Rogue. Not Rogue like anything. Rogue. The game the description came from. For all of you people who say Rogue like, you have no fucking clue unless you've played it. Or new people who played it.
I know what Rogue is.
All right. Nerd power. I, for the record, did not play it because I was poor and in Alabama and was too busy playing, the later. I was fucking four, okay? I was four. The game Rogue is one of the very first dungeon crawling concepts. It was developed by Michael Toy and Glenn Wichman in 1980. And it was running on college Unix systems, which we know what Unix has given us these days. You know, Jason's looking at me.
Well, there's a lot.
I mean,
the biggest Unix-based system right now?
It's BSD, but Unix gave way to BSD. Anyways.
Okay.
I know where you were going. My brain just kind of said, well, everything that isn't Windows and maybe even a little bit that. Anyways, Rogue.
Anyway, yeah. So basically, the way this game directly inspired another one called Hack that led to NetHack and led eventually to such games as Diablo. So basically, in Rogue, you're an adventurer and you're digging through dungeons and you have your dungeons pretty much unmapped. It will recreate itself with every gameplay. It's going to be a new experience each time. And it will have monsters and treasures, and you have to fight your way to the bottom level to retrieve the Amulet of Yendor, which is Rodney spelled backwards, and get to the surface. You cannot escape until you have the amulet. You also cannot return to the earlier levels until the amulet is retrieved. So basically... this pretty much came through because of a text game called Colossal Cave Adventure, as well as what?
I'm a little delayed. I couldn't find the Wendy Carlos one, so you have to settle for this.
Okay. Just look for Tron Scherzo. Anyway, D&D, of course, also influenced this in the whole fantasy adventure type game genre. God, Rob. I tell you, ask you to do one thing.
You had one job!
So, at any rate, the original one was basically all in ASCII. The monsters were recognized by different letters, like a Z for a zombie. It also used... the game was great for... it ran on an ASCII terminal. It could run on the IBM Color PC. There were Apple versions. There were versions for... God, what was that other one? Because I know there was one that came out on one of the weird-ass consoles. But for the life of me, I can't remember what it was. But basically, you had your movement keys, H, J, K, and L. You also...
Vim keys, what?
You had... I liked that Q was to quaff a potion. Instead of, D for drink. W was to wield your weapon. E was to eat food. The DOS version had specific keys, cursor keys for different items. You could use the scroll lock differently too. Each of the levels were like I said, completely random. You also had secret doors that would, if you happened to hit that part of the wall, a secret door would pop up and lead you to another part of the dungeon where there was more treasure slash things trying to bite your ass. The game, like I said, was developed by Michael Toy, Glenn Wichman, and then Ken Arnold. The earliest versions were for Unix, played at UC Santa Cruz, and then moved on to UC Berkeley. And from what I understand, the game was almost a exercise in AI development, because there had been nothing else like it at its time. And it really was pretty intelligent. I mean, you had the monsters programmed to attack. You had the way that the dungeons would populate. All kinds of different things. It was really, really very cool. Also, later on, it was published by Epyx, E-P-Y-X, if we remember them. So the game had been ported out to Amiga, Atari ST, TRS-80, Color Personal Computer. There was also in 1988 a commercial port by Mastertronic for the Amstrad, the Commodore 64, yes. Atari 8-bit, and the Spectrum. There are tons of clones that we have running in Windows, Mac OS X, Palm OS, Linux, BSDOS.
Literally everything.
And
this, among many other games, literally exists on everything. It's your reference game.
This is the answer to the question, why do you install Unix on a toaster so you can play Rogue on it?
It also is included with the base distribution of NetBSD and Dragonfly BSD. Yep. So basically, there's even automated play like Rogue-O-Matic. There are... I mean, just all kinds of things. And basically, the game was reviewed in Dragon Magazine. I don't know if anyone is familiar with Dragon Magazine, who doesn't play D&D. It was the big TSR gaming world magazine that came out. Lots of good short stories, good art, but, you know, supplements that would go along with D&D stuff, like the Teddy Bear Golem. I have that issue. And so it was reviewed in Dragon number 112 in the Role of Computers column, and it got a 3.5 out of 5 stars. I mean, mm-hmm. of course, dated at the time. The Amiga version got really great reviews, and Rogue was listed number 6 of the 10 greatest PC games ever by PC World in 2009.
I mean, the game itself is so basic, but there's so much that it inspired. It's really unreal. I remember playing this game in the third grade. My friend at the time... had it on his PC Junior or whatever those things were. He had the Epyx version of the game, and we would play this for forever. And part of the game was like, oh, what the hell's that? Like, you know, what's the Z? What is that? You know, we have to go look up like what, because there was like a little translator guide or something that came with it. We had to look up what everything was, you know, what's the gold, what's the potion, but at least things were colored to give you an idea. But the fact that the dungeon was always different, you know,
it made it a different game every time.
It really did. And, you know, games like Diablo owe a lot to Rogue.
They do. I mean, even looking at some of the 8-bit games, I mean,
sure.
Well, let's look at how Rogue led to Ultima.
I would argue a game like The Legend of Zelda is owes a lot to Rogue.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But I'm thinking more in terms of the development of the fantasy genre mm-hmm. in a video game. Mm-hmm. You know, it led us to Ultima. What was the other one? Wizardry.
Yeah.
You know, all the ones that had some sort of graphic interface for delivering the adventure as opposed to text-based. You know, leading the way to any of our JRPGs, you know. And if you want randomly generated dungeons, look at the Phantasy Star series. So.
All right. Well, there it is, your classic game of the week, a very, very true classic, Rogue, available everywhere, so check it out.
If Ranma is going to post any video of this, use the one with Puff the Magic Dragon, because it's hilarious.
Okay. All right, there it is, your classic game of the week, Rogue. This show's going rogue tonight. We're almost up to 2 hours, and we haven't even taken a break yet. We had a false start, too, to thank. So, all right, but anyway, we are going to take a break here in studio. When we come back, there's plenty more to come. Sadly, I did skip the Fugle question this week because I knew we'd be running long, but we will get to your emails, the FUs of the week, your phone calls as well, 1-877-GAME-OLR, or his name on Skype, Orange Lounge Radio. All that and more when we come back with more of Orange Lounge Radio right after this. Welcome back, everybody, to Orange Lounge Radio, live on this Sunday evening, May the 11th of 2014, episode 552 of our program. And it has been a very busy show already so far. I mean, we had Christopher Tin on earlier in the show, who gave a great interview. So a big thank you again to him for being on the program tonight.
I also have a minor crush on him now.
Yeah, well, he is married.
So am I.
Okay, yeah, it's nothing wrong with a little crush. A little crush never hurt anybody. A music nerd crush, for sure.
I have a total music nerd crush.
You talked time signatures with Christopher Tin.
I did.
Not a lot of people can say they did that. So
that made me kind of feel special.
I feel like there should be a badge for that in Nerd Scouts.
I felt special in my heart.
You are special.
With Bog Network loot.
Maybe, oh, yeah. Give Jamie loot on the network she's a part of? Sure, absolutely. All right.
I'll take it.
All right. Anyway. Moving on, I want to talk about, I had to bump a few things I would have usually talked about at the top of the show to later, but I had a really busy week personally, and I know somebody's going to ask me about it eventually, so I'm just going to kind of get it out of the way here. I was on the Huffington Post live on Friday, as some of you guys might have heard, and it's really funny. That's why I laughed when Christopher Tin brought up the whole, like, he's inspired by Florence, who, like, you would have never guessed or whatever. But yeah, I was on Huffington Post live because the most random thing happened, and somebody had put in an ask box earlier, who is my favorite musician ever? And I said Alanis Morissette, because I really truly have loved her since I was like 17. And, you know, when I was coming out and going through some, you know, rough periods in my life, I listened to her first two albums, first two American albums anyway, Jagged Little Pill and Supposed Former Infatuation Junkie. I listened to an awful lot. So, like, you know, yeah, I like her a lot. And, I think she's amazing.
I was in college.
And so I answered this question on my ask box, which then tweeted, well, the producers for Huffington Post saw my tweet about who's your favorite musician, Alanis Morissette. They contacted me and said, we're doing this thing with Alanis on Friday. Would you like to be a part of it and ask her a question? I was like, yeah, kind of. Thank you, Jason. Kind of.
I'm deaf in one ear now.
It was very flappy hands.
It's a trend for me tonight.
The reaction. So yeah, I did it. So they did. And it was all done over Google Plus. I was really impressed with Huffington Post technology, I got to say, because the other girl was calling in via Skype. I was on Google Plus. And as Alan said, who knew that Google Plus would ever be useful for anything? Well, it got me to talk to a musician I've loved for a very long time. So you can check that out on the Huffington Post. I don't know where the link is specifically. I'm sure Tiger Claw will post that in seconds. My question... I had to submit three.
Do you regret you can't do that on television?
No. Well, my second question was about you can't do that on television. I had to submit three questions, and the producers picked the one I was going to ask. And the question I asked was about the song Ironic, because about 10 years ago, Alanis changed the lyrics. And she said, I am officially changing the lyrics to this song in my support for gay marriage. And the lyric of the song used to be, it's like meeting the man of my dreams and the meeting his beautiful wife. Well, she has officially changed the lyrics to, it's like meeting the man of my dreams and the meeting his beautiful husband. And she said that is, and when she did the Jagged Little Pill acoustic album a few years ago, that's the lyrics that are on it and everything. So I said, I understand you had the lyrics change, and I wanted to thank you for that, because that was, you know, you people asked, what would you say to your idol if you could meet them? And I just would say thanks. So I worked the thank you into my question. But then my real question was, you know, is it true you got ordained as a minister to marry same-sex friends of yours? And if so, what was a favorite wedding memory? Unfortunately, she hadn't married any same-sex friends, but she did talk about her support of the community and everything. And I thought that was great. And that was perfect.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, but you can see all that on the Huffington Post. So my little brush with that kind of fame this week. Anyhow, something else going on this week that's very interesting. I'm going to bring Shane back onto the show because he went on this little trip with me this week. And thanks to a listener tip, I think it was Dr. Sue or something, they said you should go to Scandia because they have all these music games there now.
Was that would be me?
Was that you? I thought it was you or Dr. Sue or somebody. Okay. So Shane and I
went to... It might have been Dark Tits, yeah.
Okay.
Not a very far of a listener to...
Here's the thing. So when Shane and I went to Scandia like 2 months ago or whenever Shane was visiting... Shane, when was it that you were here visiting?
January.
Come over here and get on a mic. It was January? Okay, so we went over to... Hi, Shane. Welcome back to the show.
Hello.
And you're playing Pokemon?
Yes.
Real quickly, thoughts on the remakes?
I don't care about them right now.
All right. So you were here in January.
Yes.
And we went over to Scandia, and they had nothing but a pump it up machine, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't bad, so it was okay.
But then...
Wait. And they had, like, the little lights from a 2DX machine just hanging out on top of, like... I don't know. What was that, like, the ticket area where you buy tickets for mini golf or whatever they have over there? I don't know.
Like the ticket counter. All right. Anyway, so we go back on the tip or whatever, and oh, my gosh. Like, not only do they have the pump thing, they've got, like, a DDR with two screens, a poppin' music, a freaking Beatmania 2DX Spada, which is, like, the new one. Like, it's, like, the 21st one in the series or whatever. Like, I didn't even think they had any of those machines in America. They have a Technica 3, which Shane did the closest I've ever seen him do to Flappy Hands when he saw that.
No.
Yes. So, Shane, what did you think? So, yeah, it was almost like, oh, my gosh, this is a real arcade. Like, they actually have video games and not just a bunch of ticket spitters. So, snaps for you, Scandia Sacramento. I don't know
how
you pulled that.
Well, it's because they're all privately owned by one dude. That's why. You should see his garage.
They can't be making money off of that because nobody, all the little kids would just go up to the machine. Like, Shane and I were the only ones putting money in it.
Yeah, it's Sean again. You should see his garage. It's
yeah, I got
we need to get him on the show if he's local.
I got to meet him just talking when he was working one day, just talking about
he has an
shooting games.
Open invitation, I think, like every like Friday or something. They just have people come down and just come play.
Oh my gosh, I would think scary people would show up if you do that. We'll have to figure that out and get him on the show. But I just want to ask Shane, what were your thoughts on the machines you got to play and the whole experience?
I'm awful at 2DX. I realized that. And the Technica machine was too quiet, but the pop and music was really, really good, even though it didn't have songs I wanted to play. There you go.
Rama in chat says, DDR with two screens, how does that work? It just had a second screen on top. I don't know why. It just did.
It was like the Technica machine, so you could see what people are stepping on, I guess, without having to look at the back of their heads. It was really dumb. There was really no reason for it.
There were think about like how Dragon's Lair used to have the second monitor on top so people could watch the animation. Same diff.
Yeah, but it was actually an extreme machine, so it's not even really worth it to look at.
But it was so weird going all this. I mean, they also had the Guitar Hero machine, and they had a lot of music games. And I was like, I remember a day when we would have to drive to the Bay Area or L.A., to see that shit. And like, here I am now.
Well, don't bother with the Bay Area.
Like, I feel like I'm 25 again, and now it's like, you bitches come here to Sacramento because we've got all the machines
and
now.
And we don't
apparently.
Even have Keith anymore.
Right? No. I guess it's this other guy you guys are talking about that has the love of music games that brought him over there. But I was insanely happy to see it. Like, again, it's as we talked earlier in the Amplitude Kickstarter story, it's kind of a niche audience at this point. But, hey, my niche was satisfied at that. And I was excited to see
it. It fit right into your niche?
Yeah. It's shut up. It felt really good to see, like, a great arcade again.
It felt good in your niche. Hard.
You're like 12 years old right now. All right, Shane, anything else you want to say about that whole experience before I let you go back and play Pokemon?
They need to turn up the Technica machine. So if you work there and you hear this, turn it up.
Yes, sir. All right, have fun with Pokemon. Why are you still... You caught every Pokemon. Why are you still playing? I don't understand. It's the song says, gotta catch them all. You caught them all. What's left?
I gotta get the rest of the Mega Evolution Stones and Shinies.
Fucking shinies.
And I repeat myself from earlier in the episode.
Okay, Jason, you know what shinies are?
Dang it, Shane, why don't you have more puzzle pieces?
Shinies are like Pokemon, but they're just a different color. That's it. Like, okay, get this. You have Pikachu, and then you have shiny Pikachu. Guess what color shiny Pikachu is?
Silver.
Darker yellow.
Some of them completely change.
All right, Shane,
his words.
I don't want this
you
show.
You people
to make
need
Shane
more puzzle pieces so I can get the pretty princesses.
I'm only missing like five. You hush.
All right, moving. By the way, when we talked about 25 devices being online earlier at the start of the show, let's see. I have a 3DS. Jamie has one. Jason has one. Shane has two.
He accounts for Loki too.
And yeah, so he counts for Loki too. So we've got five DSs here, all and trying to get all our puzzle pieces.
Alan?
I'm about to get the pretty princesses thanks to Jason.
Alan does not have a 3DS yet. He has a DSi XL. He has one of the...
Which does have wireless.
Yeah,
they I don't know how often it actually pulls it, but anyways.
All right, let's get...
Wait, I must capture this moment.
No one cur.
I have pretty princesses now.
To Vogue. All right. Let's move on with some rapid fire news and what else is going on in gaming. Loki.
All right. So Drive Club, you know, they finally announced the date. Was it last week? And we knew a little bit about what was going on with it. Of course, it's going to be at a slight discount if you buy the digital version of the game. It's going to be $10 cheaper on PlayStation for PlayStation Plus subscribers. And on top of that, you can trial version of it or whatever has, 10 cars and 11 tracks. There's going to be a total of, 50 cars and 40 tracks or something like that. Here's what's kind of weird. They actually had a clarification at one point that was like, yeah, hey, you're going to be able to actually keep your game when you're, the game that you purchased when your PlayStation Plus expires. And I'm like, why wasn't that a thing in the first place? I mean, if I bought the digital version of the game or upgraded or whatever, why would I lose that if I, you know, wasn't subscribing to PlayStation Plus anymore? That doesn't seem like it'd make any sense. But I guess that was something that they were talking about at one time. Anyway, so that'll be out in October. And at least they're still doing that free thing for PlayStation Plus subscribers.
That's quite a turnaround for Drive Club to go with, fuck everything, redo it, and now this year.
Well, they remember the whole thing they said was a hold up with some social network integration crap. I'm like,
I actually missed that news, apparently.
Yeah, so that was last week. Anyways, so Grand Theft Auto Online, a game I have neglected for quite a while, which is surprising because it's Grand Theft Auto, but... they have some DLC coming, the High Life DLC update, and it's not really DLC, it's just more of an update to the game, and that's usually free. That's going to be coming May 13th, and what that will include is, on top of some new apartments that you can play, you also have the option to get a second apartment if you want to do that. And apparently, they're also, well, they have this option to update your mental state, so I guess your facial expression changes or something like kind of a... you know, emoticon type thing. And the rumor is that they're also supposed to be adding heists and the heist editor at that time. But that's not mentioned in the release notes here. So I'm assuming that maybe that's coming at a later date. But the thought was, you know, hey, Watch Dogs is coming out right around the corner. And they have this online mode as well. We got to do this to kind of compete with them. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I'm still waiting for some actual significant DLC, which is, for the single-player game. And that apparently is rumored to be coming later this year. And is going to have the whole jetpack stuff as well, which everybody's still been trying to find. And then last but not least, this is pretty awesome. MacGyver is getting a mobile game. That's
Does
right.
Does it have Richard Dean Anderson in it?
It has a cartoon-shaded Richard Dean Anderson, I guess. MacGyver Deadly Descent. Apparently that's created with, I guess, input from the creator of the series. And it's coming to Android and iOS May 21st. And a portion of the game's proceeds will be donated to the MacGyver Foundation. So that's pretty cool.
I can't believe after all these years, finally a MacGyver game. It's pretty amazing.
I know. I mean, why is it taking so long?
Because
they had to make the game out of, you know, some yarn and
you
some
stole
electrical tape.
The joke. All right. I was going in exactly the same direction. I couldn't think of any better materials, though.
Sorry to hear.
You have a circuit board, a trash 80, and chewing gum. Go.
All right. Moving on. You know, only MacGyver could have invented the Oculus Rift, and there's some more news about...
Wait! Whoa! Wait a second. What kind of a segue is that?
Because the Oculus Rift is so cool, only MacGyver could have invented it.
But it exists.
That doesn't exist.
Stop
to defuse
ruining
bombs
my show,
anything.
Jason.
I
All right.
The joke.
Here's the thing.
Good segue, I guess.
Oculus once wants to have everybody in the world play their device. You know, there's 1.3 billion people on Facebook, and Oculus wants to put those people in virtual reality. The CEO of Oculus, Brendan Uribe, described the company's lofty vision for the, quote, longest MMO ever made. Or the largest MMO ever made. We know with Oculus, with the virtual world, if you're putting on this pair of glasses and you're going to be face-to-face communicating with people, you're going to be jumping in and out of this new set of virtual worlds. This is going to be the largest MMO ever made. This is going to be an MMO where we want to put a billion people in VR.
And we're going to call it Second Life.
It's dot hack. And a billion-person virtual world MMO is going to require a bigger network than exists today. Why not start with Facebook and their infrastructure and their team and their talent that they've built up?
Well, I hope you're prepared to pay the wonderful Comcast, you know, Fastlane fees for a billion, you know, person MMO, because that's going to take up a big chunk of the, you know, bandwidth, and they need their toll money.
My thoughts are, if you're taking his comments to mean World of Warcraft, then that's not right. I think it's just talking about making an experience. Think an MMO is something where everybody participates and gets involved. Who wants a big billion-person experience?
I think it's more of him laying down in a field of daisies, looking up at the clouds and going, wouldn't it be awesome if we just sold one of these to every single person on the planet? That would be amazing. We'd be so rich.
Maybe he was just high.
What has WoW's peak subscribers been?
At its peak, I want to say 11 million.
11 million.
Yeah.
Versus 1 billion.
Yes.
Which Facebook barely has. Those 300,000 are probably fucking spammers. And a barrier to entry of a stable internet connection and a 200, 300, possibly more dollar consumer product.
You know,
you see where I'm going.
It's a lofty goal to have, even if it's long term. That doesn't mean 1 billion. That doesn't mean 1 billion people on Oculus next year.
I don't think VR is going to be niche by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not going to be 1 billion. On a single title, no way. And if it is, I will be happily wrong.
There are no limits to my imagination. As I'm sure there's no limits to his imagination.
There's also no entry fee into your imagination.
That's not true.
Sial in our chat room says, I'd play the fuck out of a real dot hack MMO. I think a lot of people would.
Don't get me wrong on any of this. I never...
The PlayStation 2 games were so fucking good.
I didn't get into them personally. Like, I only wish for all of the success for all of these projects, because they are absolutely amazing. But the barrier to entry, has any console sold a billion?
No.
Not even close. Not even close. 10%.
I think 100 million Wiis or something like that is like the closest.
Okay, well, that's 10.
I might be totally on crack when I say that. I mean, I might not even be that high.
But yeah, the Oculus, at least the dev kit, was cheaper than a console. But still, dream big.
Fifth Dream says, I know, we can take Rift into this network I've heard of called Reality. It has enough bandwidth. We can all go there and do stuff like it's real.
Get off my lawn. I'm going to keep playing Doom until I die.
And do it all together. Imagine the possibilities. All right. Moving on, other rapid-fire news. Famitsu Magazine has released some details on Compile Heart's newest game, Omega Quintet. This is coming out in Japan on September 18th. Here's the thing, though. Don't think it might be like other Quintet games you've heard of before. This is an idle RPG. It's Maidens, Mankind's Last Hope to Defeat the Beep. That's their name, the Beep. I wasn't censoring myself. Their name is actually the Beep. The beep, beep, boom. The beep. All right, anyway. They are trying to defeat the Beep, and these five heroes have the singing power necessary to defeat the Beep.
Beep, 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 beep.
This is a real game, people, only in Japan. Omega Quintet, coming to you September. It's Idolmaster meets the Beep. Drop that beep. All right, lastly but not leastly, this made me exclaim a lot of excited things that had to get beeped, because I was excited to hear that Tetsuya Mizuguchi is back in game development. That's right. We thought he was taking a break or was going long term or whatever to focus on the college stuff. But in the new issue of Edge, which is available in print form and so off, he talks about how he left Q Entertainment. He took up a role as a lecturer, but He is not giving up on video games. So he's right now, quote, helping with a few games, but they are not like his previous work, like Res or Space Channel 5. He says, I'm helping with some social games in Japan. I'm just helping. I want to start a new project on my own, maybe this year or next year. Yes. Very excited because I'm a Mizuguchi fanboy.
That you are.
I am, very much. All right, Dark Sakura.
Well, there is a new newcomer for the Left 4 Dead franchise, and it is an arcade game that's planned for Japan that basically it's going to... I don't know if this is going to be something like the Gun Survivor series, if it's going to be one of those, but it looks like Taito is working with Valve to put this out, and it's been... thought of announced before as Project Z, but now it's Left 4 Dead. Next up, Shaq Fu, A Legend Reborn. It got funded. Next!
What an interesting world we live in where Amplitude probably won't get, you know, on its current path anyway, won't get funded, yet Shaq Fu got funded. Just let that sink in for a minute.
But...
and then have a drink.
But there is something good coming out of this.
Okay.
5% of all the profits will be donated to the Boys and Girls Clubs of America.
Okay. Better than 5% going to Kickstarter, but that's a great thing to hear.
Last but not least, we have, you know how there's those two new tracks for OutRun? Well, now there are going to be three OutRun soundtracks coming out. You can get them for $9.49 for each soundtrack on Amazon or $9.99 on the iTunes store. Or you can just get them individual in case you're like me and only care about Magical Sound Shower.
Fair enough.
And don't already have other OutRun soundtracks.
All right. Fair enough. All right. We're going to move on. There is no Fugle.
I was going to say, for the record, one of my horses in Derby Owners Club was called Magical Sound.
I remember that. But because there wasn't enough characters to be Magical Sound Shower.
But you did have Beat Politary.
Just Politary.
No, Politary, so that you could whip Politary.
Yes.
And that Politary would cry.
Although it's kind of tasteless in retrospect, but like I don't really wish harm upon this individual, but it was just a running gag with Bomani music because her songs were really bad.
I had one called Just a Horse that ended up being awesome.
Didn't you have one called Glue?
Yeah, I did have one called Glue, and Glue ended up being like my best sire.
I remember I think I had one called Britney Spears.
Yeah.
And then...
I miss Derby Owners Club. That was the day. I know it's still around, but it's not
the same.
I
found my folder.
Did you really?
It has my horses in it.
It's awesome.
Anyway.
All right. Anyway, no Fugle question of the week this week because I knew we would be running long because of the interview, and I wanted everybody to ask our guest questions, but it'll return next week. So facebook.com/orangelaunchradio or google.com/+orangelaunchradio.
There's a game Sega should bring to the Wii U.
What?
Derby Owners Club.
Hey, now you're talking.
Because then you can whip the horses with the Wii remotes.
Yeah. And Sega's in bed with Nintendo now.
And you'd use your little subscreen for training.
This is a good idea. Why isn't this happening? I don't understand.
Because licensing everything that goes into that game is actually kind of fucking expensive.
Yeah,
that's why the cabinets are premium.
That's true. And aren't those like six digits for those cabinets?
I would not doubt it, especially for that main screen that always shows the running race.
Crazy.
That alone is easily high fives.
All right, let's move on to some other
take the card with you.
Longer gaming news stories we'll get into maybe a little bit more in depth. Loki.
All right. Once again, we're talking about Nintendo here. They're planning to approach emerging markets, you know, like China and stuff, a little differently than they do the rest of the world, including that they are going to actually target those markets with different hardware or new hardware, I guess. They're basically saying, you know, we want to make new things, you know, thinking rather a cheaper version of what we currently have. The product and price balance must be made from scratch. So if you kind of take it like, you know, how they made the Wii Mini, you know, doing something like that for maybe like the Wii U or something, or, you know, 2DS or something like that, where it's slightly cheaper than the stuff that's out there, you know, to help drive sales, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I guess that's a good idea. I can't imagine what they would strip out feature-wise for, like, a Wii U. You know, the 3DS, obviously, the 2DS works.
NFC.
Yeah, I'm thinking with the handhelds, it would be really easy to get.
The gamepad might be tethered.
Yeah, it'd be really easy to get a lower cost console for the handhelds. The other consoles, I mean, what about just a Wii? Like, why the Wii U? Why not just a Wii?
Well, they have the Wii Mini, so they could do that.
This is for other markets that don't have video games as much as they do in Japan, USA, Europe, as it is. So,
recently, they haven't had any consoles because they were banned.
It's an interesting change in strategy for Nintendo, especially considering a lot of the crap the Wii U's getting here in the States and in Japan and so forth. It's an interesting way to try to turn things around by taking a proven success and launching it in other places. I mean, it's not like China is a small country. You know, it's something like the Wii has the potential to do very well there. So it's a very interesting strategy. Maybe a good way to cut the losses in the home department.
I don't like that term.
What?
Proven success.
Well, what would you call the Wii in that regard? It is. Come on, Wii Sports, best video game ever, sales-wise.
I've you know, saved the argument that I made at least three times on the show previously. I call it a lightning bolt. It came, it landed, it's done. Other markets, I don't know. I truly don't know. How could I know the state of gaming in China? Like, I really don't want to make any claims to that, but it's one of those things, like, it was truly media fervor. It wasn't technically... low barrier to entry, gaming, games from real life that we all know and you can put to use with less investment.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lightning bolt. You are not guaranteed the success if you give it to somebody else with cultural differences. Mm-hmm. Bowling isn't a worldwide thing. Soccer,
true.
Probably no. I don't know. I just like that term has a place. The Wii U is not it, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we will see what happens. I think we'll get more information of this at E3. Maybe. In the meantime, as far as the Wii U is concerned, you know, I mentioned that one of the other markets besides just the U.S. is Japan. And Japan, some information for what they're going to be getting Wii U-wise. Bayonetta 2 and Hyrule Warriors set for summer debuts in Japan. This surprised me. I figured Hyrule Warriors was probably a summer, like, early fall game. But the fact that Bayonetta 2, no, it's fucking happening this year. OMG, and it might even be summer, especially in Japan. That's pretty exciting to hear. So, finally we'll get to see what this, you know, hype with Bayonetta 2 is all about, because the first game was pretty awesome. Of course, Bayonetta 2 bringing a two-player mode into the game, analog and touch-based controls, and of course, new hair for Bayonetta, very important. That's really exciting. The only other Wii U games confirmed for this year for the West, those games, Mario Kart 8, Smash Brothers, X by Monolith Soft, which I'm actually very curious about that one. That looks like it could be a winner as well. And whatever else they announce at E3. So I'm fully expecting at E3 we're going to get release dates for Bayonetta 2 and Hyrule Warriors here in the U.S. That's pretty exciting. So some things to get excited about on the Wii U. Is it going to be enough to really push sales of that system? I don't know. I think another price cut would go a long way in helping that, but we shall see. Meanwhile, Dark Soccer are going to talk about a game that should be on the Wii U, but probably won't.
But isn't. Alas. Minecraft, specifically the PS4 and Xbox One versions, they are not going to have the infinite world size that the PC version does. It will have borders. You will find the end of the world, and then you'll fall off of it. Basically, they are constrained for size limits so that you can't... I mean, they have bigger worlds than the PS3 and 360 versions, but they still are limited because there's only so much memory, only so much space. Not infinite.
People make a big deal about the PC worlds being infinite and so forth, but, I mean, it's really infinite in theory.
You get the equivalent of a kill screen.
Yeah.
The data starts...
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you're going to run out of server space. I mean, it's going to be forever. I mean, you would be challenged to ever be able to run from one end of the world to the end. But
well, people do actually make that. Look up, I think it's called the Endlands.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing in Minecraft where people basically go until the game starts having corrupted data and the calculations won't apply anymore because they've already used up what they can.
Wow. Has anybody found that on the VOG server yet? Everybody stays in one little area on the
Everybody stays
server.
In one area, and also...
I tried to go out a ways when I built my house, and to come to find out, it really wasn't that far.
That's why you fly.
Well, the other thing too is like I occasionally, well, I don't anymore because I haven't really messed with the server in a while, but I'd occasionally cut all the area that's around, because I did that so that new terrain would generate, because you know, when we upgraded, you know, there's new biomes and stuff that weren't generating, so I did that, and so I clamped it all down to where we were just at, so if some idiot goes straight, you know, for a long ways away, I'm just gonna probably unless there's some interesting stuff over there, I'm probably just gonna, you know, erase that terrain and
clip it out. Yeah Okay, fair enough.
It's really boring, though. There's not a lot of terrain that's interesting over there.
There's a lot of great stuff on the VOG server, though. I know we haven't talked about it in a while, but there have been people working hard on there to connect everything with trains everywhere.
Seattle said it best, the Farlands. Mm. That was it.
The problem right now is when they upgraded Bucket, it's because they've added all this like new stuff now, because they're giving you the ability where you're going to be able to change your username. And so they're tying into IDs now. And so all the systems that are based off usernames are all broken. And so it's just a big old mess. The whole infrastructure is kind of being rewritten. So a lot of those plugins aren't available. And I've spent all my time programming, so I haven't really messed with, you know. Because honestly, I looked at the server logs and there's like nobody on there. Yeah. So whatever.
How do you guys feel about the limited space on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One? I kind of feel that even though it's limited, it's going to be very hard to push the boundaries of it. You know, it's going to be a lot of space to work with. I don't think it's a big deal.
Well, they're saying it was because of save file limitations. So how big of a save file are we talking? Because save files aren't normally that big, at least on consoles. So
I would imagine even with a couple megs, which some games have like 30 meg save files. I mean, they're huge. Some of them.
I'm surprised you couldn't just make an exception. I mean, come on. It's Minecraft. Like, nope. Sorry. We have this rule in place here that we can't do this. We're not flexible at all. So
it might have something to do with like the RAM or something. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure those save files are going to be able to be pretty big.
You know, I was just thinking. Remember when 30 megs were hard drive limits?
Yes. Right.
When I moved out here, we had a 60 meg hard drive.
Yeah. My first PC had a 40 megabyte hard drive. Like, that couldn't even fit an episode of this show.
The day the gigabyte was, you know, was standard, I was like, oh.
Exactly.
My first computer had a 0 megabyte hard drive. Womp. My first computer, mine, it actually was in my bedroom. It had no hard drive and 2 5 1/4 inch floppy drives.
Yeah, I remember when a 5 1/4 disk could hold what, 720 kilobytes?
And when you measured your hard drive by height.
Yeah. My gosh. Anyway.
I used to use a full height hard drive as paperweight.
We're reminiscing again. Let's go doing more news.
Because we're old.
I know. Loki.
All right. So this is kind of, I don't know. Everyone's been kind of wondering since they announced, you know, Unreal Engine 4, hey, so when are we getting the next Unreal Tournament game? Because it's been like, you know, what, 6 years since, you know, Unreal Tournament came out? Maybe even more than that. So now Epic is going to put out an Unreal Tournament game, but they're kind of going a different route with it. They're actually making it open source. And so, you know, they're going to be creating the game. It's going to be on... want to say it was going to be on GitHub or something like that, and maybe not GitHub, I don't know. It is on GitHub, so, but it's going to be available to the people that actually pay for the Unreal Engine. So
I don't know if I trust those crazy people at GitHub anyway. I'm kidding.
So, and, you know, and apparently there's going to be discussion with, you know, people, you know, they're developing, you know, the people that work at Epic developing the game and, you know, fans of the game. And you're actually going to be kind of helping mold how the game is. And, you know, they're going to have Twitch streams showing, you know, stuff like that. Also, like I said, you know, all the code that's created during the development of the game will be available on GitHub if you're an Unreal Engine 4 developer. So, you know, you have to pay that, was it $19.99 a month or whatever it is. So that's kind of neat. And when the game does come out, it will be free to play.
Interesting.
Or, I mean, sorry, yeah. And not free to play as in you buy stuff, it's free. So,
which is a shocking, like... I really don't want to do Unreal a disservice because they have been a mainstay for so many important things for as long as they have. And so I really, I very, very specific what I'm trying to, the point that I'm trying to make. I've always considered Unreal to be kind of second. More engine, less game. Exactly as Loki just finished saying. Unreal Tournament, not so prolific, but the games that have been built on Unreal Engine, far and wide. Phenomenal. That's where their strength is, and they make a good game on top of it. The fact that they're going in the same direction that Valve has with Steam. Steamworks and custom and mods, mods for their game aren't new, but items and all of these other community-driven things that generate interest, revenue for everybody. It's the right choice for them. It's the way the gaming has gone. It enables them to do new things and open up Unreal to plenty more players that may not have been able to play it in the past. Not condescendingly, welcome to this generation. It seems like they did it right. They're here. Everything that they've done has been interesting. The pool of available, capable games has only gotten bigger, and it's exciting.
Some comments from our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com. Dark Tetsuya says, not going to lie, super stoked for the new free Unreal Tournament. Tiger Claw says, Unreal Tournament had a huge mod community behind it. It's where you can download lots of custom maps, skins, and all sorts of mods for it. SG100 Matt says, I still have Unreal Tournament 2004. Still my favorite Unreal Tourney game, and I still play it occasionally. Live.vognetwork.com. Those comments.
By the way, You know they recreated the whole end of a Hypercube in
Yes.
Gary's mod?
Yeah, you mentioned that. Crazy. Mod communities are something else, but I mean that in the nicest way. Anyhow, let's move on. One community that's on hold for a little bit, Need for Speed. After 13 years of a new Need for Speed every year. Really? I didn't realize that. My God. Well, they took a year off this year. It will be back in 2015. And this was broken. This news was broken during an EA conference call about earnings. Ghost Games in Gothenburg is working on an innovative new chapter of the storied franchise. We've planned an extended development window to ensure we're delivering a high-quality experience for Need for Speed players next year. That quote from CEO Andrew Wilson. So no other reasons outside of that. But you know what? That's all right. Take the time to get it right, folks. There's nothing wrong with that. And I look forward to playing this new Need for Speed game. So, all right. Let us take a moment to go to our email bag. You know, every week you guys email us. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send your emails.
And yeah, boy.
Whoops. Ooh, not that one. Sorry about that. This is the song that we use for the emails every week. When you guys email us, Dark Soccer is going to dive into the mailbag head first and find some emails worthy of reading on tonight's program.
All one of them.
Just one?
Yeah. Hey, Orange Lounge Pokemasters. Let's create our own Pokemon on this week's show! With exclamation points. What would your custom Pokemon look like? What are his or her powers? Example, fire, ice, electricity, etc. Don't forget to name it. Great show as always. Keep gaming, dudes and dudette. EA Skeezy. I would have a dark type that would be female and based kind of off of a fox, kind of, named Bob.
I don't even know where to go with this question. I would want a kitty named Sanrio. Like my kitty. Well, Alan's kitty, but mine by association. Do you have a Pokemon you would have, Jason?
I don't have the imagination for this anymore. It's really strange to say, but like I said earlier, I've owned maybe three of them, and I really appreciate the universe. It's interesting, it's beautiful, and I love what they continue to do.
But Jason would like a brain for his Pokemon.
That's it. Jason's Pokemon's going to be Mother Brain.
I don't have any courage.
I know, he's like,
I need a heart.
Is it the characters in Wizard of Oz?
I want to go home. Jason's is going to be Mother Brain.
Well, that makes that battle very interesting.
That was a great Facebook meme I saw, by the way. Happy Mother's Day with Mother Brain.
Did you see the Cubone one? I forgot what site it was, but someone said Cubone's having the worst Mother's Day ever because Cubone wears his mother's skull.
Awful.
I think it was Geekology or something.
Loki, do you have a Pokemon in mind?
I don't fucking know anything about Pokemon. I don't care.
We have to do our various shows as Pokemon.
where we only say our names the entire show. Rob.
Just be Olar.
Thank you for the email,
like
I think.
Team America, World Police to me.
No, we love the random questions. If you have some random questions for us, participate at orangeloungeradio.com. I would think with
I'm a Digimon fan anyway.
I would think with the news stories we've had this week, y'all have some things to say. So participate at orangeloungeradio.com. Yo, why did you just make crossed fingers at Dark Sakura when she said she liked Digimon when you don't even know Pokemon anymore?
I know Pokemon a hell of a lot more than I know Digimon.
But you never did you ever watch any of the Japanese Digimon?
No, definitely not.
You know,
Digimon 02 is like the best anime in the universe.
Okay, I'm just gonna say this. This guy I dated once, like this is years before Alan, obviously. This guy I dated once had me watch the Digimon movie.
You said Disgaea.
Needless to say, it didn't work out.
No. We have to have you
Womp.
You need to watch it in Japanese.
It's actually a true story. But anyway.
I am disappointed, Rob. My heart is break.
I'm just giving you shit. All right. Although that is a true story, but that wasn't the reason. But I won't go into the reasons here on the show because I'm classy. Let's get into the FUs of the week. Speaking of classy, it's time for us to say fuck you to things that are pissing us off. Why? Why do we do this on a video game talk show? It's called tradition. Deal with it. Dark Sakura.
This one's private. I'm leaving it at that.
All right.
Actually, no, I have another one.
Okay.
Fuck you to my grandmother's doctor, who thinks that people give a shit that he used to play for the University of Alabama football team and isn't actually taking care of her needs. So fuck you with a sandpapery giant 3-foot dildo.
Ouch. Jason, you want to follow that?
No. I don't want to come anywhere close to that. F you to highway construction.
Oh,
fucking
God.
Everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. You had to come through Highway 50 to get here, didn't
you? Yup.
Oh, you poor
you
bastard.
You warned me.
That's my drive home from work every day.
I forgot.
It wasn't that bad.
The good news is you don't have to go through it on the way back.
I got more traffic in Berkeley, shockingly, on the way out here than that. Mm. Whatever. Minor gripes. I'm enjoying my time in San Francisco. Thank you for asking.
Loki.
I'm not a big fan of cyclists, and I'm really not a big fan of cyclist racing, and the fact that, you know, they're shutting down Folsom, at least most of Folsom, for a fucking bike race. Yes, we could have done this on the weekend, but no, fuck you guys, we're going to do it on a Monday, and we're going to shut down most of, you know, the part that people actually drive through. Oh, and it's going to be during business hours.
Wait, they're shutting down Folsom on Monday?
Yeah, they're shutting down, a good section of, like, Folsom Boulevard and stuff like that. God. So, it's just like, I fucking hate you guys so much. And now, you know, now they're doing it. Thankfully, I'm not going to work right now, so it's not a big deal. I just don't drive through Folsom that day, but, you know, it's still fucking annoying.
I have to see if that's going to impact my work tomorrow. I was just about to give an FU to the fact I have to be up and in work early tomorrow, but now I'm worried about this stupid thing that Loki's talking
well,
about.
Well, it's just in like Old Folsom, so.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
I don't think
as long as it doesn't stretch out to Rancho Cordova.
No, it's not going to Rancho as far as I'm aware.
All right. Then, in that case, my FU of the week would go to, I don't know, I guess things have been mostly well this week. I've actually had a pretty good week, all things considered. So, my FU of the week would go to just the fact that the year is going by so fast. Where did it go?
May.
I can't find. I know. It's May 11th. It's crazy. All right. F you to the fact that Frappy Hour is over. That's what I'm going to say. It's actually probably a good thing. Those things are a lot of calories. All right. That's it for the FUs of the week. Just a couple more stories for you guys, and then we're going to open up the phones at 1-877-GAME-OLR or username on Skype, Orange Lounge Radio. But a few more stories for you guys. Loki.
I saw this news, and I kind of giggled because I was like, damn. But yes, Elder Scrolls Online has been delayed on consoles. Originally supposed to be coming out in June at some point. Well, now it's now coming out. It's about 6 months later. So that's got to suck, considering that I don't think that MMO's done too well as far as like people being impressed by it or anything. So the fact that now the console versions aren't coming out until November, December, that's got to hurt. Especially now that they're coming out instead of a dead period of, you know, releases, it's holiday in the middle of the fucking fourth quarter when no one's going to give a shit about your fucking game.
Well, that can have positives and negatives because it could come up on Christmas lists and so forth.
But Bethesda probably would have another game coming out, and it's either going to be maybe like Doom 4 or a new Fallout game. So who's going to give a fuck about an Elder Scrolls Online game?
We'll see. I don't know. I mean, I
unless
agree
it's Dishonored 2, maybe.
I agree that the reception of Prey 2, finally. I agree the reception. I agree the reception of Elder Scrolls Online hasn't been the greatest, but some people I know are really into it. But it does seem like the other MMOs out there kind of eclipse it. Like, nobody's really going after Elder Scrolls the hardest. People are playing it because WoW's boring right now, or because WildStar's not out yet. You know, I kind of fear for Elder Scrolls once everything else kind of gets up and going. But we'll see.
And then, you know, it's not like there's not going to be, you know, new MMOs coming out. Like, there's going to be this game that's coming out from, I don't know, just some no-name company named Bungie that's, you know, Destiny. And I'm sure that game won't affect the sales of that at all.
Not at all. Dungeon Buster in chat says, delayed, hopefully to fix all the broken stuff that should have been fixed in the beta. Welcome to the wide, wonderful world of online games, where they never work.
To be fair, though, it is an Elder Scrolls title, so a vast majority of bugs are to be expected, usually with hilarious results, but you know, it is an MMO.
Correct. Yeah, in an MMO, though, things are different. It's one thing to screw up your world. It's one thing to another to screw up everybody else's. Anyhow, some news on Disney Infinity, which, yes, Disney Infinity. There, of course, there's the new ones coming out, and it is a success. How much of a success? Well, Disney Interactive's decision had revenues increase 38% during the second quarter. This means they have an operating income of $14 million. This compared to a $54 million lost last year. This business grew, quote, driven by the strength of Disney Infinity. And there's also growth in Japanese mobile markets. Unfortunately, this isn't all good news because they also had to cut 26% of the staff and a 50% reduction in game development. So they didn't just get at those numbers at the strength of the games.
Because they're not developing any other games other than Disney Infinity.
Yeah, that's kind of the well, I think that there's some mobile stuff too, but yeah, it's not quite what it used to be. So yeah, Disney Infinity sales over 3 million starter packs and an estimated 500 million in global retail sales to date. Disney Infinity 2.0 this September, of course, with the Marvel characters.
Well, yeah, and then here's the other thing too that Disney's doing, why they probably laid off people, is that they are now outsourcing their games to be developed, you know, for their movie titles. So, like, for example, they're not developing Disney Planes, the sequel game that's coming out, the Disney Planes 2 or whatever. Majesco's doing that now. Or I want to say, like, Tangled had, like, a third party doing that one.
Harmonix is doing that Disney Fantasia.
Eventually.
Someday, yeah.
I wish it was sooner than later, but
things happen. So, well, I mean, I'm glad to hear, you know, I'd like to hear about profitability in the gaming industry, although I'm a little sad it came at the loss of jobs, but hopefully it will lead to job creation in a year or two, so that would be some good news. Speaking of good news, I can't think of a better thing to end the show on than talk about free games, right, Dark Sakura?
Yep, Plants vs. Zombies is free on Origin this month, go get it.
Well, that's good and bad news.
Bad, you have to get Origin. Good, brains.
I don't know. It wasn't so bad. I got it for the Titanfall thing, and you know it hasn't eaten my computer alive, so whatever.
The good news about all that, despite all the shit we've given Origin over the years, it has gotten better. You know, it's still kind of, I don't think you really need it, but it's not quite the pain in the ass it used to be. So
I'll pick up free games on it. Yeah. I'm not going to buy games on it, but I'll pick up free games.
Well, actually, I got Dead Space for free on there too, like not that long ago. Like,
I got Dead Space a long ass time ago for free.
They've been giving away.
Dead Space 3.
They've been trying to entice people to come to Origin by giving away free games from their catalog. So, hey, I'm not going to complain. I got Populous for free too.
Like,
that's
good old
classic
games. I have quite the library there of free games that they put out every now and then. I'm plenty of new of them, but hey, what else is new? But Steam.
See, but then you get that client on your desktop, and then good old games come out of nowhere and says, hey, we've got Covert Action available for $5. You know that Sid Meier's game that you're like the only person on the planet that likes it, Rob? So I had to buy it. Like, I had to buy it. It's Covert Action, you guys. Awesome. And I don't know. Maybe I'll end up getting Titanfall, too, because I kind of want it, but I'm trying to hold out for a sale. Trying really hard. We'll see.
Just wait.
I'm trying, Loki. It's difficult. All right. That is it for our stories tonight, but we are going to go to the phones. The Skype line is open, 1-877-GAME-OLR, or our username on Skype, Orange Lounge Radio, if you want to give us a call to talk about anything we've talked about tonight, or possibly something else. Maybe there's a story we didn't hit that you want to talk about. Go ahead and give us a call right now. While we wait for some calls to come in with a delay, I'll ask Loki if there's any last-minute stories, and I'm going to bring up our Twitter at twitter.com/OLR.
Well, real quickly, we talked about a really expensive HD NES console that was supposed to be coming out.
Yes.
Yeah, so now they're finally selling it. It's $500, and it will upscale.
$599 US. $599 US.
And it will upscale games to 1080p.
Your old Nintendo classics in 1080p.
Of course, you have to buy controllers if you don't have controllers, and you know it's one solid piece of aluminum, but fuck that. I don't need it to upscale that. And I think if you
if
you bought an NES and bought an upscaler, it'd probably be way cheaper than buying this thing. So I don't know.
Some people,
and just as reliable as it was back in the day.
Do I have to blow on the cartridges to get them to work for that authentic feel?
That actually
didn't
work.
Yeah, actually you would probably, because you know it's those cartridges still. So.
Going to our Twitter, twitter.com/OLR, some interesting tweets coming in. SSG100 Matt sends a tweet. This is sure to be polarizing, but I'm going to read it. SSG100 Matt sends a tweet that says, according to a study and survey, this is from reason.com, more gamers politically align themselves with libertarian. I'm not super, even though that's not where I personally necessarily go, I'm not super surprised to hear that. Could that potentially be because whenever we talk about these politics about, like, you know, violent video games and they're trying to ban them, and does it drive people away from the two parties that everybody talks about most of all?
Well, the two-party system is shit anyway, so maybe people are actually just getting smart.
You think? You think that's
starting
with gamers?
I am actually turning my interest toward the after party.
Is that real?
No, that's real. That's basically what's evolved out of the Occupy movement.
Interesting.
Very cool stuff. You should read it.
As long as it's not, as my mom calls it, the pee party. Anyway, let's go to the phones. We do have a call coming in. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
It's the one and only Ranma. How is everybody in the studio tonight?
It would just not be Orange Lounge Radio without Ranma calling in. What's up, buddy? We're doing great. We had a great interview tonight, and Jason's here. It's a full house tonight. We have 25 devices on the internet. It's great.
Well, there's 5 more devices I have wired up right now.
What's up, buddy?
Not much. A couple of quick things. Number one, I meant to mention last week where you were talking about that waffle place in New York City that we took you to.
Yes.
It was called Waffle and Dingles, I believe. I think that's the name of it, but the place is so good.
So good. Still there?
Yes. Yes, it is.
So there's a possibility I will be in New York very soon.
We're going for poutine.
Gee, I wonder what announcement this is related to. Because we may also go a weekend without a show.
Yeah, potentially, yes. I will give you, I will know next week.
Stay tuned.
Rob, you don't have to worry about not doing a show. I have a small studio here. We will jury rig something.
we'll do a OLR unauthorized or something.
There you go.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things that could be coming up. So I don't want to say too much, but I will know for sure in 7 days.
You can call it Marmalade Radio because it's orange jam.
Tune in for next week's show.
I'll definitely tune in for next week. The second thing, not gaming related, but something I meant to ask you. I don't remember if I did. How do you feel knowing that there's going to be Dunkin' Donuts in your neighborhood, and if it's already there, have you been there yet?
I am so fucking excited. I'm shaking and crying and screaming and convulsing. I'm just like, it's you guys don't understand. Like, I know the rest of the U.S. probably looks at me and goes, it's just Dunkin' Donuts. Fucking shut up. But, like, live in California and have no Dunkin' Donuts. And people even ask me, like, where do you get donuts if you don't have Dunkin' Donuts? And I go, that's That's a
Rob's
great
so
question.
Excited he can't.
But they
I want us to get Tim Hortons.
Yes. But for the record, the grocery store, and there's lots of mom and pop stores. There's no Winchell's anymore.
There's one Winchell's in LA.
One Krispy Kreme. But anyway.
Actually, I found 4 Krispy Kremes in town in the area.
Really?
Yep.
I guess they're coming back.
There's a couple in Roseville, one in Atomos.
Everybody finally got off Atkins, so they're coming back. But anyway, as far as Dunkin' Donuts goes, there is one in California now, and I haven't been there yet because it's in Barstow. Barstow is between Los Angeles and Las Vegas, known as Death Valley. Yeah. So I'm not going there to get a coffee. However, it is coming to our neck of the woods. I think they said 2015. So I think we're going to start seeing them next year, which I'm...
Don't care.
Which I'm excited. Their coffee is so flipping good.
I have a reason I don't care.
So terrible for you.
I am not going to care because I can't.
Do you still need me to ship you a few batches of coffee?
I would love
that. We can get the coffee in town.
Yeah, however, we can get the K-Cups, but I'm going to be honest. The K-Cups are not even as good as the real thing.
We also can get the bags of coffee.
Yeah, I think there's better K-Cups.
I thought it was
there.
Really horrible when they had like apple whatever flavored fucking coffee.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell were they thinking? But the coconut was really good.
It does not compare to that drink that they give you that's like a little bit of coffee and then creamer and sugar. Amazing. Anyway, I'm glad you could bring the discussion on our video game show to food. But you know what? Donuts are a great great snack to game to. Not healthy, but
Unless you're me, you sit there and you make a batch of popcorn and you sit there and you eat it while you're playing Kingdom Hearts 1.5 Remix.
Yeah, something like that. I'll usually play, you know, Final Fantasy 14 and sob quietly to myself and to my, you know, bowl of potato chips. But, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. All right, anything else you want to talk about tonight?
Last thing, and I'm getting out of here. Yep. So yesterday, I picked up my glorious PlayStation 3 from the shop. Mm-hmm. And the guy told me that it's working. I had it burn in for about 4 hours, so you're good to go. But I recommend getting a new one because this one's going to may die on you soon. He pretty much told me, don't use it for streaming of anything. Play a couple of games on it, movies, but don't use it as a streaming device.
Interesting.
He's like, get an Apple TV. And I'm like, what?
Was there a reasoning behind that?
Well, I took my PS3 in the first time because when I was watching my Ron Web Blu-rays, it would lock up after about 10 minutes. And then it would not read Blu-rays. Now it's working fine. The guy told me I brought it in just in time before it started to yellow light out. He pretty much said he had to disassemble it, clean all the thermal paste off, put fresh thermal paste on it, reassemble it, and get it up and running.
Wow.
He said that the PlayStation 3s were never designed for streaming, and I'm like, I've been streaming on this device for maybe about 2-3 years, and I haven't had an issue with it, you know?
Maybe you should just flip it upside down like we used to do with the PlayStation 2s. That fixed everything.
And ones.
We used to put them side on their side, my PS1.
Yeah, you used to flip.
That's what I did when it first started acting up. I flipped it horizontal, vertical. I'm like, okay, let's see if it works. Still nothing.
They get pretty hot, but it's like I always thought like mine's going to be full of cat hair because it was like super hot heat coming out of that thing. And I took it apart, and it was actually completely clean.
If that PlayStation 3 gets hot enough, though, perfect for grilling chicken.
I never had one of those.
But I'm...
All right,
and I remember like when you get the PS2s, they were like, "Don't use it for playing DVDs." The drive was not designed for normal DVD spinning. I'm like, "Well, let me go out and drop $50 on a DVD player." You know,
we used ours for
drive.
Years.
So. Most of America used theirs for DVD players. That's why that thing sold so well.
I don't understand how a DVD drive isn't used for DVDs.
Silly.
You know how it is. Somebody says something, and everybody follows along with it. But I think it was more of the heat issue because when I moved into this new place, my PS3 sits on a little platform under the table.
Just get an intercooler. Well, there you go.
I mean, my friend had a friend who had an uncle who told me that, you know, they buried E.T. in the desert in the middle of New Mexico, so.
And lo and behold.
All right. Rom, I got to let you go to get more calls, but thanks so much for the call, buddy. Uh-oh, internet connection problem.
He's gone anyway.
We're losing Rama anyway, so thanks for calling. Bye, Rama. If you hear this and your internet didn't cut out. Boy, that was weird, oddly timed. All right. we're still connected, it looks like.
Same here.
All right, so I'm just hoping we're not having those same issues that we were having earlier
Rama's
in the show.
Problem.
All right.
Northeast problems.
Oh, look, and Rama just left IRC, so that's, there you go. He had to make an exit. That's what he was just like, I'm out of here. Bye.
He's all, fuck it, pull the cord.
Fuck it. Yeah, he just said, fuck it, and pulled the plug. He was gone. But we do have another call coming in. So, hey, one man's loss is another man's gain. Let's get to it. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who is it?
Hey, this is Akdeft.
Hey, Akdeft. Hey, you're lucky that Rama just pulled the plug out of anger or something, because now you have some time for calls. What's up, buddy?
Well, I could talk about a lot of stuff that happened during the week, and especially on Twitter, but I want to talk about Team Fortress 2.
I don't know why. can we talk about Kirby Triple Deluxe and how much Dark Sakurai hates it, and you're going to have to come up here and kick her butt, and by kick her butt, meaning give her a hug and go out for Mexican food together?
Wait. Dark Sakurai hates Kirby Triple Deluxe?
Not really.
No. I haven't played it yet.
It was a joke earlier in the show.
Yeah. Me either. FedEx screwed up my order. It pretty much got lost, and I have to wait until Wednesday to report it back to Amazon and say it got lost. Basically,
I'm
kind of sad up because of that. I would be playing. I would be talking right now about Kirby, but no.
I am surprised you are not over there right now, beating down the door, showing your anger. But all right, it's very reserved of you. Anyway, I'm sorry. That's not what you called in to talk about. What did you want to talk about? You want to talk about Team Fortress 2?
Yeah, basically, I got back into Team Fortress 2 after like months of not playing, at least on a regular basis. And in the still, that the game is pretty much the same. It hasn't changed that much, at least from what I've noticed. Aside from new hats and some new stuff for the weapons, but don't know. I found a new enjoyment on it again, and pretty much my where I'm going is if you have played a game recently, or maybe not recently, but as of recent that you haven't played for many months or many years before.
I actually do have an answer to this, but you guys are going to roll your eyes so hard you can see your fucking brain. But it's my honest to God answer. And that is because I had the new computer and all the new graphics and everything, the one game I had to go back and see was Mass Effect 3 multiplayer and play that again. I totally did do that this week too and play the multiplayer in glorious, smooth frames per second. It was so sexy. Like, the graphics were about the same because I guess, you know, Mass Effect 3 was only set for a certain bench level of graphics, and I wasn't using HD textures or anything. So not to be all Jamie about my gaming week, but I got...
Bitch, please.
But I definitely played some Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, and that was a sexy thing to revisit. I'm trying to think, because I've had the new computer, there's been other things I've been revisiting too. Getting to go back and play some of the games I've had, like Diablo and stuff, was pretty cool too. But what about you guys? Is there a game, Jason, Loki, Darsire, something you've played for the first time in a very long time? You just kind of went back and revisited.
It wasn't a long time, but I've had the conversation a couple times about comparing Titanfall on the 360 versus the Xbox One, and they're not terribly different. I think more of the differences that I see are the fact that I sit closer to the TV at work than I do at home, and I think it may have those 120, 240 hertz features on and not on game mode, flat 60, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if this actually counts, but I did download Jet Moto 2 onto my PSP, not Vita, onto my PSP the other day. I bought it a while back, and graphically, I don't remember anything, but not having all of the shoulder buttons completely fucks that game up. Because the R1, L1, and R2, L2 do very distinct things.
I really wish they'd bring that game series back.
Jet Moto?
Oh, it's awesome.
Saw what they did with 3, though.
Three.
I played Fairy Solitaire.
Fairy Solitaire? Kicking it old school.
I was bored.
Hey, no,
so
it worked.
So I played Fairy Solitaire.
Especially when you have some of those free games. I played Portal 2 not that long ago, and that was the first time since probably the game came out. It was kind of fun to relive that one.
I should just give you my Portal 2 shirt that I don't wear.
Cool, free clothes.
I played, while I was restocking my 360, I downloaded and played Discs of Tron. That didn't look any different.
My 360 hasn't been hooked up for like 6 months. I should plug it. I had so many downloadable games, it was disgusting. So I should plug that in and play some of that old school stuff. I did have the Tron. like they released
the
Arcadetron
with the Arcadetron. Four mini games.
Unless you count the overworld as a game, although it's not.
Woo, so. Look at me. I can travel in four directions.
Hey, in the 80s, that was modern stuff. Well, there you go, ActDeft. There's some of our walks down memory lane.
Yeah, those are pretty cool games, especially like Portal. It's a game I usually try to play at least a few times a year. I played Portal, the first one, a few weeks ago. I did a stream on it, too, so mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good times. That's why when these companies give away games for free, even though they might be a few years old, they're always worth picking up, especially like, you know, let's say Plants vs. Zombies being given away free right now on Origin, right? I think, you know, if as long as you're cool with having Origin on your computer, most of you probably already have it, I would say go grab it while it's free because, you know, maybe you haven't played Plants vs. Zombies since it was first out on the iOS or Android devices or when it was first out on Xbox 360. You know, and it might be like a whole different experience on PC. So it's worth it.
Yeah, definitely worth picking up, especially if you don't have it, because it's a really great game. So
absolutely.
All right, I already have it on Steam. So
yeah, there you go. ActDeft, I'm going to let you go so we can get a couple more calls. But thank you very much for the call. Good question. Trip down memory lane.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And I hope you get your copy of Kirby already. I can't have Kirby's number one fan here on OLR being robbed of his Kirby. It's not cool.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad.
All right,
that'll manage.
All right. Tell FedEx we're coming after him, too, if they don't get it worked out. All right.
Yeah.
Take care.
See ya.
All right. 1-877-GAME-OLR or username on Skype, Orange Lounge Radio. We can probably squeeze in one more call if someone can get in here pretty quick.
Dark Tetsuya sends us a note that Fistful of Potions was taping from a comic shop during Free Comic Book Day.
That was last week, but yes. Did I read that one last week.
That was during the... Wait, did you?
Yeah, if they tweet during the
Jesus,
show, I
it was
get
before
to it.
The show announced. Don't blame me.
Jason, if you let me do my segment, I'm just kidding.
Well, we are being invited to Concord, Ontario. A Catholic school board trustee. Wants
what the hell is that? We get all these random ass tweets that are like, oh, I went to church and I saw the at OLR. And I'm like, what the fuck is this?
I've been
this?
Trying to figure out who they are. I haven't done it yet.
I don't know.
OLR is, it's a church. I just don't remember what it was because I remember seeing that one time.
Probably, you know, and Ontario something.
That's fine. You know, people, you know, are into it, whatever. But it just cracks me up because I'll see these random tweets. It's like, you know, like somebody tweeting, God damn it, I heard you talking shit about me on air. That was an actual tweet from Gemmet this week.
Yep.
Or, you know, hey, Read Only Memories is on Steam Greenlight. Like Red Entertainment tweeted us, which is true. And then it'll be like, oh, the worship this Sunday was so good.
It's Our Lady of Rosary Church in Union City.
Thank you.
It's like my story that I've told
about. Or probably in a bunch of different places, but yeah.
My coworker who has the Twitter name Dice, and he retweets everybody who bitches at him for Battlefield.
Because there's one that's www.olr.net and then olrsd.org for the San Diego one. I think it's just a church there.
Who owns OLR.com? Online Residential, New York source for real estate listings.
Yes.
Well, that's not, listings. That's not.
Yeah, I looked into that some time ago, but, you know, whatever. We're Orange Lounge Radio. Anyway, moving on to another tweet. Again, this is the last chance to get called in or to call in 1-877-GAME-OLR or username on Skype, Orange Lounge Radio. I see some people talking about Civilization in chat, which is, you know, ties into the interview we had earlier, and it just kind of makes me laugh because Civ is that game you can go back and revisit once in a while, but it's going to be a very long while. All night long.
And it's going to look exactly the same and play exactly the same.
And it's going to be as amazing as you remembered it the
absolutely.
First time. Absolutely. Well, with
as
Civ,
long as you have the time to spend on
with
it.
With Civ, they have the, you know, expansions and everything. I kind of hope that I have a funny feeling when Christopher Tin was on the show earlier talking about that song of his, it might be for that new Civ game. Was that yeah, the,
probably
is that the impression you got? Because that's the impression I got.
I didn't. I thought it was I was leaning towards some new title. Like I was going to make a tongue-in-cheek joke about Civ 6, Civ 5.5, Civ next DLC.
Well, there's the whole don't call it Alpha Centauri Civilization game that's on its way. So.
Not my world. That was going to be my tongue-in-cheek joke, but I would kind of expect it to be a new game, personally.
Well, we'll see.
A different company, at least. I
was surprised. It was next week because I would have thought E3, but you know, now's the time of year where all the companies are kind of getting a jump on E3 to say, here's the games to get excited about at E3.
People that might not have a presence there as big as some other companies.
Right. Yeah, I know about that one.
Or even just need to shove some of the news out of the way before what they're going to announce there.
All these companies that weren't cool enough to get in the door. Anyway, going to another tweet from 13X Forever or Cross Forever or 13 Forever, who tweets us and says, did you know the Kiro Blaster, a new game from Pixel from Cave Story fame, is available right now?
Ooh.
And tweets us a link to playism-games.com. I did not know that, but you have educated me. I've checked that out because those Pixel games, like all the that stuff was great with Cave Story and all that. So excited. Hooray, hooray. Unfortunately, Shane's not in the room right now, but I had to read this tweet from Andy Scout, who tweeted at us saying, I can't trust game recommendations from someone who doesn't like Ni No Kuni. Well, me neither, Andy. Me neither. All right. I guess that's it for tweets. How about any other last-minute stories?
No.
Loki, anything? No? All right. Well, I guess that means we're out of here because the phone is not ringing. So I'm going to go ahead and close that on up, and we're well past 9 o'clock anyway. I want to thank you guys for staying up late with us tonight. Really appreciate it. What a great show. Thank you guys all for being a part of it. If you like what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio, please, all we ask, tell a friend or two about the show. Help spread the word of the show. That's all we've got is word of mouth. We really appreciate a nice review on a website where you found this show, like iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Those reviews go a long, long way in helping us be visible. So please help us out. Really appreciate it. Jason, I want to thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
I know you didn't get to talk as much tonight because I didn't get to budget you any stories, and we had another guest on tonight who, you know, with all due respect, Jason, you didn't win a Grammy. So
that's a tough act to follow.
Maybe next
give
year.
Give him all of the accolations and lauds I possibly can.
But it's a pleasure to have you here, and come back again sometime. Actually, you said you might be here next week?
Yeah.
Question mark. Oh, great.
Let's make a weekend of Scandia next week, and I can stick around here for the weekend.
Then we can hear that schmexy voice of yours all over again next week. That'll be fun. So
I'll be here.
We'll give you some stories.
I can be here.
All right. So it's like Jason the sequel or something. Of course, I make it sound like a Friday the 13th movie or something.
Wasn't it? The funny slash sad thing is that may turn out to be more accurate. Not the Jason movie part. Before that may turn out to be more accurate
than you think. You're going to be here for months and months again?
It's fucking possible.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Yeah. We'll keep that fourth chair nice and warm for Jason. All right. Moving on. Dark Sakura, thanks for being here, as you always are.
You're welcome.
Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners tonight?
I really want a burrito.
A burrito?
I may go to Adalberto's.
Second that. That makes her a good
Do you want to get me a burrito?
No, I want to get a burrito, though. I'm going in the opposite direction. I'm going that way, far away.
Well, poop.
Well, if you eat a big enough burrito. Jason, I didn't properly give you a chance to give your final thought. Did you have a final thought?
No, actually, I really don't. I have literally nothing left in my mind right now, besides maybe telling your dryer to, like, hurry up.
Hey, it's got a timer on it. It'll tell you when it's done.
Laundry problems.
All right, my final thought. I love the fact, too, that you are literally on your last clean thing you own.
So
it's a radio show. He can wear whatever he wants, but he's got pajama pants with little chilies on them right now. It's hilarious.
This was a very explicit plan. I have more than a week's worth of pants, but I like having all of them just in case for some reason I don't get a chance to do laundry because doubling up.
Yeah.
Pajama life.
Exactly. That's all right. I'm wearing gym shorts.
Yeah.
It's radio. They don't look at us. I'm lounging. The audience is lucky I'm wearing any pants at all, but, you know.
I'm like,
we're lucky you're wearing pants audience. At all.
The studio.
I do that out of respect to you guys who come here in the studio, but trust me, the minute you guys leave, woo!
I did.
Sorry, Jason.
I did say as soon as I walked in here that, lounge has gotten more appropriate because we're not all crammed around a dining room table and we're actually spread out.
What do you think of Studio N7?
It's fucking open. There's space to move and not have to shift and get out of people's way and contort and twister.
Most families would have a dining room.
Well, you do have a dining room. It's literally
there. You remember what we did with our dining room?
Yeah, pinball.
Pinball. We called it Pinball Alley.
I'm just saying, wouldn't a baby Pac-Man machine fit like right here? Just saying. Wouldn't it be great? I'm going to turn into Dark Sakura's house or
just get a table. I have a freaking bar top cabinet that could go right there.
Where's that in my video capture card?
You know, I thought about it before I came here, and I thought about it after I came here, and I was like, oh, forgot it.
I'm messing with you.
N7 is wonderful. That is my final thought.
All right. Fantastic. My final thought tonight is it is really stupid to drink a cup of coffee at 8 o'clock in the evening when you realize, oh, yeah, I have to go to bed early tonight because I got to be up at 6:30 in the morning.
That's not true. You have awesome dreams when you're caffeinated, and they're weird.
That's a good way of looking at it. All right. Last but not least, Loki, your final thought tonight.
Final thoughts. I hate my fucking touchpad. For some reason, it keeps like clicking the right button, even though I'm not touching the right button at all. It's really annoying. And it's just some stupid Asus gesture garbage, which I disabled, but it's still doing it. So fuck
you
that.
You have
shit.
A rough life.
That, and I'm trying to figure out how to fucking do texture atlases correctly because I don't want to buy this one program to do it, and it's just a pain in the ass.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for another week at Orange Lounge Radio. Thanks to Christopher Tin for being here. Thanks to all of you for listening, those of you that were here live and on the podcast and Stitcher and all that good stuff. Thank you very much. We'll be back to do it all again next week. Happy Mother's Day once again to all you guys out there. And have a great week. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or Vog Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.